This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
What is up? My name is Garnet Lee. This is the Big Weekend Confirmed E3 2013 show. We're going to jump to it as quickly as possible with my fantastic Superman co-host. You know him as Jeff Cannata.
Yes. Could not be more excited about Man of Steel.
I love how you're rocking the shirt today.
Yeah, I'm that on-the-nose nerd guy.
You're right there with yeah. me, right? And we have a fantastic look. It is a tremendously fantastic Friday here in Santa Monica. We got a great cast of folks to join us, starting with at the end of the table, Mr. John Davison.
Hello.
Rocking his, I have it to describe wardrobe, but your wardrobe also merits description, which is a
TARDIS.
It is.
TARDIS put together of a bunch of phrases from Doctor Who, which is incredibly...
Very nerdy.
It is a very cool shirt. I like that. We also have from Polygon, one of two... victims from Polygon here. Mr. Arthagese.
Hi. It's so early.
I know. They're all already on me for having energy. I'm like, I brought the fuel. Little did you know I was doing meth again.
This is how we do. This is how we do. We go have a whole week of no sleep and partying into the wee hours, and then come to our show at 9 a.m.
It's awesome.
And gone it on meth.
I don't even go to parties, and I'm still exhausted.
Hold on. I'm better now. And then giggling like a schoolgirl is Corey Davis here.
As usual.
Good to have you back, man.
Thanks a lot.
Congrats. For those of you who don't know, of course, Corey now working on the new Ninja Gaiden project, formerly with the, what was the name of the studio from Germany?
Jaeger.
Yeah,
you're
Spec Ops.
U.S. resident again.
Yes, I'm a U.S. I'm back.
Are you liking that?
Yeah, it's a lot different. I'm like driving cars and stuff.
I like driving cars and stuff.
Welcome to the 1900s.
But yeah, I miss Berlin, but L.A. is cool as well.
Yeah, well, there are less people who like look cool and wear turtlenecks here.
Yeah, there are.
It's kind of a shame.
You're the only person this week I've heard have anything nice to say about Los Angeles, so congratulations.
What does that say about Berlin? Waiting in the winds, we also have the awesome Justin McElroy. We have Jonathan Metz from Nintendo World Report to bring the Nintendo Fire, who is also, I found out, an aerospace engineer in his day job.
Wow.
So we'll be able to do rocket
What you're
science.
Saying is don't quit your day job.
Don't quit your day job. Well, at least if you're an aerospace engineer,
yeah.
Don't quit your
I
day
mean,
job.
Like, literally, it's a really good job.
It's a really good job. And Zav D'Amato, somewhere around Los Angeles in traffic, headed this direction at the very least. So we got lots to come. We're going to dive right into it. I felt like what we wanted to do here is divide this thing up into digestible chunks for you guys out there listening. So we'll do the conferences up front because there's lots to say about those, but still lots to say about the games. We're going to keep the segments a little shorter today so we can run people in and out and also get back on track. So we'll just go right into it the way the Fab 2 did with Microsoft.
Starting with Microsoft.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what started the whole show.
That's what started. Yeah. Microsoft kicked the whole thing off with a conference that I'm going to throw right out there right now. As far as press conferences go that we've seen, including the two reveal press conferences, was the best tempo press conference.
It was just a rapid fire game spalooza.
I've heard people say there were too many games at their press conference.
Those people are stupid.
Yeah.
Those people should not have been told.
Speak.
I thought it was awesome. I was so amped. I walked out of that and pre-ordered the Xbox One immediately.
Did you really?
I'm a sucker. Well, I pre-ordered both of them, but yeah.
I pre-ordered both, but I haven't told my wife.
Oh, that's a rough Amazon bill.
It is. So I'm the lone person at the table who's pre-ordered one of them.
Which
weird.
PS4
which one?
Ticket?
I ordered the PS4 because
like saving $100.
Because right now I'm not dropping $1,000 on pre-orders on right. air. And $400 was more pocketable.
Why? I mean, not to get past the press conference part already, but why the PS4 and not the Xbox? Because there were more games shown for Xbox at the show.
Because I am sort of hyped for where they're going with PSN and the Facebook connectivity and the way that device works. And I could not give two shits about that freaking TV overlay crap they keep forcing on me. I just don't care about it.
I don't either, but that...
It doesn't
that
fit with my entertainment
from a games perspective. I mean, Microsoft had way, way, way more stuff announced for their console.
Yeah, way more exclusive stuff and way more exciting
I think you're exaggerating a little bit when you say way more.
No. Well, I'll tell you this. I'll take Rise and Project Spark and Forza.
And Titanfall.
And Titanfall.
I care about two of those four.
Which two?
I care about Titanfall, and I care about Forza.
You don't care about Spark?
Not really. Spark is amazing. Is magic.
Okay. Dead Rising 3.
And I think that the reason
and it'll
you don't
be
care
magic
about...
for 5 minutes, just like Little Big Planet was, and then you'll get bored with it, and you'll hope that creators make some cool stuff.
I don't disagree with that, actually. But I'm it's much more along the lines of what I wanted Little Big Planet to be, which is, hey, the creation part is actually playing it. Playing it is creating it. Instead of two, you know, separate modes.
Possibly.
And I think that
we'll see how well that actually integrates when you're there doing it. I mean,
it lacks a lot of the charm of Little Big Planet, at least so far.
Like, you mean Sackboy?
Yeah, it doesn't have that hook, like that sort of like playful hook. Although it looks more robust.
It's a bit Peter Molyneux in its presentation.
It did look like the Rare game at the conference.
Yeah.
And I was also getting like a whiff of Will Wright in there as well.
But like
it just seems so powerful.
As far as games go, I have a hard time remembering all of the exclusives that they announced for that show. Whereas at Sony, it's hard to think of exclusives that they announced at that show.
Well, so Microsoft opened with MGS5, not exclusive, but that was a big, powerful open for them. They closed on Titanfall, so they bookended really strong. And Titanfall, of course, is a apparently... It sounds like timed exclusive because...
No.
Well, EA said there's options.
They said that's something we can look at down the line, but talking to five people from Respawn this week, they said they want to focus on one platform, and
makes
they're
sense.
A really small team.
Smart.
That's like 65 dudes.
It's PC, 360, and Xbox One.
That's all played on my
PC.
But
Respawn's not doing the 360 version.
They won't even talk about who's doing the 360 version. They refuse to say.
So it's a PC and Xbox One game, and then Activision's like, yeah, we're going to give that so we can actually sell some copies over here.
Yeah. So it looks like tons of fun, man.
You had Rise then as the next, you know, sort of hero placement game. And I don't worry, I'll go back and pick up some of the other ones because there were some
Rise
cool games.
Looks like such bullshit.
I agree with you.
Did you not agree with that. Did you go in the booth?
No, the behind closed doors is much better.
Was it much better?
It's much more Batman than it looked like in the presentation.
Exactly.
You mean in the combat?
Yes, it is. And it actually ran at a really high frame rate when I was watching them play it.
It runs great.
A lot of other games that I saw. And so I was more excited about it after I actually saw them play it.
It's the most, I would say it's the most next gen of any of the games I saw from either company. And I love the behind closed doors. The guy kind of explained the game in a more interesting way than I think that it showed at the conference, and which is basically referencing Batman over and over.
Right.
And also the idea that they're doing performance capture. He said, you know,
everybody's doing performance capture now.
Well, but it's not just motion capture. He said motion capture is last gen, performance capture is this new gen, and it's performance capture in everything. It's every moment is performance capture. You know, so you get facial emotion from actors, even in just sort of combat animations.
I did see the funniest next gen bug at the show though on that game. You know how they have all the real time cloth physics on all the dudes that are running around? Well, the main character's skirt got stuck up inside of his belt.
That'll happen, dude. That happened in Rome.
Yeah,
it really happened.
He was going bare ass the whole presentation. And coming in.
That's verisimilitude right there.
Stuff like that. It was amazing.
I don't want to derail, but as far as like the next gen exclusives, I think that Infamous Second Son was easily as impressive as Rise from a technical point of view. But I do think that Rise looks really good. I'm more interested in seeing how Crytek does a game with the first-party production assistants of Microsoft, who are pretty good at focusing titles from third parties and getting them to a point where they should be, as opposed to just letting them float into the marketplace unescorted.
I completely agree about Infamous, but I think it's really the only game that's exclusive to PS4 that is a system seller to me.
So to answer,
the order looked really cool, but that was a trailer.
Yeah, it's a trailer, and it seems a ways off.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you can't talk about it. Okay. But it does look awesome if I knew what kind of game it was.
That game exists, right? Like, it's a game that exists. Okay.
This is radio
like
audio. Radio.
So for those of you who don't know, my girlfriend Ariel is at Sony Santa Monica, and she's producer on The Order. So I'm under, you know, incredibly tight restrictions here.
To give us more information.
But yes, that is a game that exists. And
not that she would show you a game that's under total NDA or anything. Ever.
Ever, no.
Moving on.
However, if you did notice at the beginning of that trailer, they did put up a disclaimer that said all of that was in-game. So
okay, they do that with every next generation game at the beginning of a generation.
Rendered in-game.
I don't believe anything until I see someone playing it.
Okay, so back to the conference.
Right.
Back
so
to the
conference. I think I judged Rise.
Oh, so I asked you a question, but we never finished about why I pre-ordered PS4.
Yeah.
The other reason, and this is probably goes back to me being old and having been a PC guy, is the lure of the more powerful hardware.
Okay.
That's fair.
And I just there's something about the sexy factor of the more powerful hardware that got to me.
And it's interesting that you say that, because as far as like stuff that was impressively next gen, I feel like the Microsoft conference had a lot more of that from a visual point of view.
I mean, we're talking about Drive Club later, but Drive Club does not stand up to Forza 5.
I agree. Or even to Need for Speed.
Need for Speed Rivals is the best looking driving game on the show floor.
Agreed. Yeah, definitely. What were you going to say?
So I think I sort of, in hindsight, judge Rise more harshly, because I came out of the Microsoft press conference feeling that they'd been drumming in this, like, we're going to own the living room. This is about the family, living room, center of the house, whole family. And it was dudes shooting each other, dudes stabbing each other in the neck. I mean, I was just sort of playing through the conversation with my wife if I bring an Xbox and all the games home. And the first thing she's going to say is, you're not playing any of that stuff when the kids are awake, you know?
Yeah, but granted, you know, they're sort of damned if they do, damned if they don't. Because what they said was, you know, the first announcement conference was one for them. Here's one for you.
So, well, this, more specifically, this was like the core.
Yeah.
This is the core press conference.
Exactly.
Because they announced like Kinect Sports at the Spike pre-show.
Right.
No, conversely, there was not a whiff of Kinect.
Right, but I know I'm not looking for kiddie like Wii type game. I'm just looking for some semblance of variety that is not just either shooting or stabbing things.
Well, Project Spark. I think Project Spark is really exciting, and it goes after that Minecraft, like, you know, create something for that your kids can play with. That's a sandbox.
And maybe Lococycle will be that game too.
Like, boy, Lococycle
Twisted Pixel. From what I heard, it looked like crap.
Yeah,
but it is what
sure
it is.
I'm not sure if I'm allowed to swear.
We're all off the chain.
It looked like dog shit.
It's a 360 game, and it still is a 360 game. So they're still
like
doing both of them.
360 game, even it looked really old.
Yeah. Well, you know what it looked like to me, and maybe this is somewhat art direction as well. It looks like an old Midway cabinet.
Yeah.
It looks like an old Midway cabinet, and I think that was part of the art direction to it. And it had that feel. I mean, I played it, and it was a really fun arcade game.
Yeah.
In no way felt like it should be a one game, but they're also doing a 360 version, because it, along with Crimson Dragon, are games that were 360 games that have been up-jumped to be one games. Although I couldn't find out whether Crimson Dragon would still have a 360 version or not.
Probably not.
It didn't sound like it.
I think Microsoft is publishing that now too, right?
Yeah, I think they are. Well, that and Lococycle.
And Rise is only Xbox One now?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I think
So we danced around Rise. Go back to Rise, because you were hot for Rise, Jeff. John and I are not.
Very hot for Rise. It looks sexy as hell. I mean, that's a wrong word to use with a bunch of dudes.
Especially when it rides up.
Boy, it's early. Anyway, it's very pretty. It is very, very next gen looking, but close
in a demo on a television screen, it looks much better than it did on that big screen.
The way it plays, I mean, everybody's like, oh, it's just QTEs, Well, they sort of let leak that there's a mode where all those button prompts go away, and you're just judging which button to push based on the animations of the character. And it's the same button prompts that Batman uses. It's the identical thing, where it's like X is always a hand slash, Y is always a leg kick or body block, and B, you know, whatever, is a throw. And so those things happen not at random, not like a QTE would. You trigger them and you unlock these execution moves as you progress through the game. So, they basically ripped off Batman, which is what I've been wanting everyone to do, because that combat system is so damn fun.
Yeah, when I saw it originally, I was really concerned that it was just going to be a big thing for show. There was going to be a lot of systemic stuff going on as far as things the player could tangibly interact with.
Right.
And then when I saw them playing it, I was really impressed. Like, they put a lot of effort into differentiating the results of button mashing versus skilled timed execution of mechanics and things like that. And they're using a lot of the similar combat circle stuff that Batman uses, and working on a combat game myself, I really respect that. I think it's cool.
But it also sort of reeks of like Dynasty Warriors to me.
Really? You know,
yeah.
Really? I didn't get that at all.
Of just, you know, coming into masses of guys, ripping them apart. I have to admit, as pretty as it was, looking at this guy with his short sword just ripping dudes apart and patoning them, I was like, okay.
See, that's what I got that vibe. I didn't play it. And so hearing these guys talk about it, I'm like much more interested now. But from seeing the presentation, I was getting that
they want
early
you to be
PS2 Dynasty Warriors, we've got to have a game like this type
and
thing.
And the difference
you know?
Is they want you to be like the playing general. They want you to do all of these other interactions where, yes, you're the guy leading the charge as the Roman centurion would, but also the guy ordering the troops where to go and what to do. And how well they pull it off, I guess, would be.
Well, he's going to have that Kinect thing that a lot of these games are having now where you point with your finger. When you raise your finger and you point to a
which system, is cool.
And you tell your guy to go to that spot, he'll go to there.
And the NSA now knows what you've been directing people to attack.
I think I'm curious to see what Crytek does with it, because there's always been a pretty good sense of like raw physicality mm-hmm. in their games, like with the nano suit and the Crysis games. Just watching them traverse the environment and like pick people up and throw them and things like that has always been really cool. And I hope that this takes that further.
I just love that it felt like the next gen, because it was the only game I think I saw in the entire show where the 3D model dudes didn't have that dead eye 3D mm-hmm. model guy look. It looked like there was life in his eyes. And I'm like, that's what we need to get. Need to get to that place where
there were a lot of games at the show that were getting around that by just sticking helmets on characters. Yeah. I did notice there was a lot of character design where people are wearing full face masks.
Yeah, that's true.
So the next one that they came up that was I don't think is received with as much hero fanfare as I would have thought it would have been even, you know, a year ago, would be Sunset Overdrive. So Insom changing sides now, going.
I am drinking the Kool-Aid on this one.
Okay.
I am huge. I know I'm like Mr.
You're drinking lots of Kool-Aid. You must be ready to pee
already. It was a very exciting show for me.
I just reviewed Fuse, so my expectations are tempered somewhat.
I think that there's legitimate perspective that Fuse suffered from Sunset Overdrive being a thing.
It's possible, and the Microsoft people I talk to say that like that is that the trailer is not overblown, that the game really looks like that, which again I will not believe until I see somebody with a controller.
Yeah, that was my thing, was I couldn't tell how you play this game from the trailer at all.
I think it's a third person shooter. Open world.
I mean, James said it was third person. I don't know how much we're supposed to say or not say, but yeah, I mean, he was being very cagey too. It gives me that Jet Set Radio. Yeah.
Totally Jet Set Radio with guns.
Oh, man, I just love the art style, and it just looks like, I love that traversal parkour stuff. I am in, man. This was one of all the games that I didn't see actual gameplay of, this is the one that I'm most excited for.
Right, and as a lover of things that are, you know, as thoughtful and very high concept, what about Quantum Break?
Yeah, it's cool. I don't know. I mean, it's always an uh-oh feeling when it's like, oh, it's a TV show also.
That looks so cool.
But yeah, the concept is awesome. The concept is super awesome.
We did a feature on that, and one of the things they're doing with the characters is taking dental molds of every actor that's doing the game.
Finally.
Wow.
So that they can put them in their head and have them actually, like, emote and perform correctly.
Wow.
We've gotten to like
that's.
Remember when the Team Bondi thing with the face modeling was like a big deal? Now it's like, yeah, we're gonna need to mold your teeth.
Yeah, because we can't mold the way the skin moves over your mouth. You're just gonna look stupid.
That's what the what the art designer of Dead Rising 3 was saying too. We were in the behind closed doors with the art guy, and he was like, yeah, you know, I've been through a whole generation where they're like, oh, dude, too much detail in your, there's too much detail. I got to pull back. And now they're like, please, more, like model the individual teeth, bro.
Right.
There's a lot to get right as far as interlacing, you know, obviously live action video and television production with game creation. But
I thought in that the transition between the live video to the performance captured was the most seamless.
It was really well done.
It felt like you got this sort of like blend from real into video game, as opposed to what you normally get is that sort of harsh jump between the two. And like, I mean, that scene with the whole like hold my hand while everything's exploding was like
so cool.
Yeah.
And this seems like what Remedy has wanted to do for a long time.
Yeah. Oh,
sort of melding of mediums.
Yeah, instead of having to actually have a television that you walk up to in their game.
Don't you say bad things about Alan Wake?
I'm not, dude. I love
Alan Wake.
Me too.
All right, so we have hardly even scratched the surface of this E3, but we've burned up some time, so I'm going to take a little quick break here, rotate some folks in and out, we'll come back, we'll keep trucking away here. Still on Microsoft, we have Dead Rising 3, we have The Witcher 3, we have Battlefield 4, we have that weird Halo tease with Master Chief wearing a shawl because he's cold or something.
The Fable tease.
According to my Twitter stream, it was to protect his armor from the awful effects of dust and sand.
Oh, well.
Wow.
That's okay. Maybe
can't
it's a
argue
microfiber.
With that logic.
It's probably a microfiber cloth also, so we can wipe his visor and make sure, you know, sure like have is. The optics all working.
Master
excellence.
Chief condom.
Master Chief condom.
That's what we need.
All right, stick around, folks. We're doing extra segments, but shorter ones so we can get through all this. Weekend Confirmed. We'll be right back.
This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up-to-the-minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games, pre-order upcoming titles, and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
All right, and Corey has hopped out for a moment. We're joined by my brother and me host, and also Polygon reviewer extraordinaire, Justin McElroy.
Hi, what a genuine pleasure it is to be here.
Thank you, sir.
I can't be more excited. Justin and I met
I'm more excited.
At a PAX once, and I have been wanting to do something with you since then. And it's finally happened. I'm very excited.
You're welcome, Internet.
Yeah.
I
wanted him on our show for a long time, too, just because the podcasting, just the dulcet tones.
Oh, really yeah, it goes down.
This is the first time I've ever done a podcast with Justin.
Ugh.
All right, so he's going to bring the fire as we continue to roll. We're going to wrap up Microsoft. We're going to get into Sony. Then we're going to get Sony done by the end of this one so we can have Jonathan on to do... I had no idea this was going to be so difficult. There's too many games.
Talking about how difficult it is and start talking about the stuff.
All right, so moving on from Rise and Sunset Overdrive, the next really big game that they showed was... I know, I'm not going to skip Killer Instinct, but we're going to come back to Killer Instinct
How crazy
later.
Of a press conference is it when Killer Instinct is sort of like a Killer Instinct, moving on.
The one where Killer Instinct is a fucking free-to-play game.
And made by the people who brought you G.I. Joe.
Well,
yeah.
Well, don't you hate on my G.I. Joe. It's good stuff.
The game?
What was the game?
G.I. Joe, the game?
I never played it.
No, but you did.
Garnet, what was your game?
Well, what was my game of G.I. Joe?
No.
What's your game of G.I. Joe?
What?
My game of the Joe.
This is what you add Justin to the mix and everything just comes right off the rails. Now it's like a symbol for E3.
I'm a consummate professional.
Oh, a symbol for E3. It's coming off the rails with G.I. Joe.
All right. What the fuck
were we talking about?
We're going to Forza 5.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that was their next big super unveil. They bring up the McLaren P1, one of two in the world, because the gamers really care about that big car that's sitting up there.
I know a lot of people that were just like, oh, it's an orange car.
Yeah. Like, when there's some smoke coming up around the edges of it.
It's really pretty.
And Forza 5 looks really pretty.
Yeah. So Forza 5, the cars look amazing. I played it. I wasn't super blown away by some of the environments, actually.
No.
Like, there's some parts that are really cool, but it just seems kind of boxy.
Okay.
It doesn't feel as next gen as I expected for this game.
I was completely sucked in on the two times that I raced in it.
It controls great.
It controls so well, and
the rumble triggers
a wheel.
The rumble triggers are amazing.
It feels like force feedback.
It feels even I don't even know better than force feedback. Like when you touch the brake at 170, 180 miles an hour,
there's like real pressure on it, right?
Well, and you start to get the feedback of like the vibration, especially from like the anti-locks as they're kicking in. So you're pulling the trigger down, and you can actually feel right about where the edge of the anti-locks are. So you can not engage them if you don't want to, or you can go ahead and pull your finger through it and get the anti-locks to kick in and get the full like pulsating vibration of the anti-locks are kicking really hard.
Yeah.
And then as the car starts to hop around, it adds another vibration to that, so you can tell there's like an off tempo. So you're not just getting the pulse from the anti-locks, you're also getting like the hop of the wheel. It's ridiculous.
It feels like it's not just a gimmick, like it's another meaningful means of feedback for that game.
I think they have a hard time positioning that game now, because the stuff that they're like, I think racing games reached a point where how much more pretty can they get, or how much more real can they get? So now the stuff that's really impressive, like, normal people don't give a shit about. Because they were like, oh, we completely redid the tire physics. And it's like, oh, okay, that's great, I guess. I mean, like but to a car geek, that's fantastic. Because, like...
And GT6 is full-on wicked because
of it. But how do you talk about that when you're trying to sell people a game that aren't, like super car geeks? I mean, like, they're...
It's a weird series for Microsoft, because it never sells as much as you... It never touches Gran Turismo, even when the 360 had an install base like the PS3.
Yeah.
But they keep making them.
Yeah.
Well, the weird loop of car games to me is that Gran Turismo, especially in 2... took what was a really what is a narrow genre of racing games and blew it up to everybody because everybody loves cars. And so they made it all about cars and, you know, this love. Oh, I can have my car in here and I can play around with it. But since then, it seems to have circled around back to a super niche sort of you're a racing and a car guy. And then you're just looped into that. You know, you're canyoned into this little small genre and it's no longer broad. It's no longer like about cars and all those cool things. And they sort of seeded that ground and other people have tried to get it like Test Drive Unlimited, but yeah. It just hasn't clicked. So I really liked it. I think the other drawback that they do wrong on those is every time they do these demos, they want to put the coolest cars in the world in there, but they're damn near impossible to drive.
Yeah.
Because like if you haven't driven a 750 brake horsepower high Pagani
with
or something.
All the assists turned off, it's impossible.
It's ridiculous.
Just let me drive my Kia Sportage.
People should a lot of people will probably be more excited that now like the Top Gear stuff is in enhanced, like they have more Top Gear stuff. Like all three of the Top Gear guys are in the game this time.
And I think the fact that the frame rate is like
it's perfect
feels locked at like 60 frames. So
this was the year of frame rate,
right? This everything feels so solid because of that, and I think Forza really benefits from that.
Yeah, it does. It does once you drive another couple of laps and get accustomed to the fast cars. It was driving very well. All right, so they also showed. We're going to come back to Dead Rising because Corey got to check that out and he wants to talk about that.
Okay.
They showed The Witcher 3, which is Jeff Cannata's game of the show.
Game of the show.
And why is it your game of the show?
Because I have to. I can have more than one game of show, but.
Ah, okay.
But
games for, of
for the
show.
Game, for the one choice. Game that it feels like it was made just for me, that the one game that I wish I could take home and play right now, the one game
Jeff,
that.
Where's your game?
Feels. I mean, I know exactly what I'm going to get. That, you know, it's easy to give a game of a show to something like The Division, you know, where it's like, there's a lot of question marks, but it's so exciting Division, of what it could be.
The Division is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, and that's certainly a contender for me, but I know exactly what The Witcher is going to be, and it's exactly the game I want it to be.
It's comfort food?
Comfort food. Well, I guess you can use that analogy if you wish, but for me...
The Witcher fried chicken.
Yeah, I went and saw the 45-minute... gameplay demonstration that they did.
Who
for
has
Witcher.
Time for a 45-minute demo session?
I could have
at
been there for 12 times that long. I would have been happy. I mean, it is Red Dead Redemption fantasy style. It's giant open world, immersive, enormous world with emergent quests that sort of happen like in Red Dead, where you just kind of stumble upon a robbery happening that you can prevent, or you just stumble upon a beast that now you can track and it adds it into your Wikipedia of beasts that you can find out more information about and learn how to track better. Giant story, boats.
When is
are
that
cool.
game coming out?
2014.
That game is so much more ambitious than The Witcher 2 was.
Well, they said, so they showed us this series of islands, and we were on one of seven islands, and that island is larger than all of The Witcher 2. It's one of seven islands, and that's not the mainland.
Right.
So there's also the mainland.
What?
Like, they're not, I don't think they're a huge team, and The Witcher 2 was a pretty linear game, like, from a mechanical and gameplay perspective.
Very linear, yeah. I mean, they said that there are now no invisible walls, which, if you remember Witcher 2, there's tons of invisible walls.
Man, that shrub is just impossible.
Yeah, now you can climb, you can jump, you can swim. There's no... nothing's off limits. So...
Yeah, it's exciting. It could be the next Skyrim.
Amazing. And I love... Excuse me. I love the creature designs, too, because they showed two or three different creatures, and none of them look like creatures from other games. It's not just like demon number seven.
I feel like creative direction on art has been a strength for the series all along.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something that they sort of nailed their own unique flavor to. All right, so then they moved into... Boy, this is such a machine gun attack here. Battlefield 4, we'll catch that up maybe later, right? I mean, the funniest thing there was the tech problems.
That
was tough.
It was impressive.
Although worse for Crimson Dragon, who had to sit there and have their entire video go in silence.
I guess that game's not important enough to stop and restart, but Battlefield
kind of insulting to the
I was talking to somebody afterwards, and I guess they were trying to do 7.1 in the theater, and that's one of the reasons they had their problems.
Should have just gone with 7.0.
I think Sony didn't have a problem.
You always ever shoot it.
All right, so what did you guys think of the Halo tease?
I thought it was for Fable until he took the cloak off.
I'm going to call bullshit on needing to protect your
laser blast armor from dust.
This is what my Twitter feed says.
If only the Flood had known, all I had to do was like just kick some sand in his face. Ah, my machinery shut down.
You know,
can't do it.
Hard,
what I thought is, I thought Master Chief would be secure enough in his masculinity. He could just say, look, it's a fashion accessory. Okay, yeah. This is all about style, and I've got another two or three of them that'll be interchangeable. As a matter of fact,
fucking...
you'll be able to microtransaction some different ones.
You're talking about when Master Chief wears a kilt.
Not Nobody sure. fucking criticizes Nathan Drake for wearing a scarf.
Yeah.
And a kafaya. Right? It's a kafaya.
So what blew me away about the Halo thing is everyone at Microsoft was treating it like it was like this big secret that didn't leak. And like, isn't it amazing that we had this Halo? It's like, it's fucking Halo.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't expect that they would announce it because usually Halo is kind of distracting from their other stuff.
Microsoft could have had the biggest surprise of E3 if their, oh, and one more thing is we're not showing anything Halo. Like that would have been.
Oh, and one more thing.
That's it.
Yeah, we're not going to do that anymore.
It does sort of underline the fact that it seems like they went into this feeling like they really needed to show a ton of stuff to the point where they showed a Black Tusk teaser for a game that's not anywhere near release.
Well, it was more of like a Black Tusk logo teaser.
Yeah, it was a logo. Yeah, like yeah. what?
It's like, these guys are awesome. Coming, you guys don't know anything about it.
There's such a, like this level of like, why did they show us all this cool stuff? Are you fucking kidding me?
No. I thought it was good for the most part, but like stuff like the Halo tease, the Halo tease would seem out of place.
I'm into like, show me as many games as you want, but don't just stand there and go, hey. Halo?
It's a fun moment. Here's the thing.
Of course, I'm aware of the existence of Halo. Like, you're not telling me, like, it's in a game or you're in the sand. I mean, like, no, you're just saying, hey, Halo?
If it was
I'm not
other
disagreeing
game.
With you, but I'll tell you this. These make no mistake, these are theater. And it was a theatrical moment when that robe came off, and not a goddamn one of you thought that was Master Chief.
So Master Chief is actually Master Thespian.
It was a cool moment, and I'm glad they did it. I thought it was cool. Yes, it didn't actually reveal anything, but it was a fun theatrical
moment. Oh, Halo fans, I'm sure, have picked that apart, because that's a kind of thing that we've never seen in a Halo game before.
And they showed some sort of bird thing coming out of the ground. Bird thing is a reveal. Halo bird thing.
World exclusive.
How did that not leak? It's actually a combination of Frank Herbert's Dune and Halo.
Okay. All right.
So they saved it with Titanfall. They really saved it with Titanfall. I mean, if you're going to end strong.
Well, they use Titanfall to be the palate cleanser for the price.
Well, so we're going to tell you. No, you and obviously, I'm doing it the other. I'm not going to give you the palate cleanser. We're going to wrap up with the reality check.
All right. So Titanfall looks awesome.
Titanfall does look awesome.
Awesome. My only concern with that game is that I actually really like single player campaigns.
Yeah, me too.
And want that.
Yeah, me too.
But goddamn, all the little details, like when you are in a melee attack when you're in a mech or a Titan. And you kill the Titan, and he reaches inside the chest cavity of the Titan and pulls the little dude out that's driving it and throws him across the map.
Or
that's
against rad. The
wall. I wish he ate him. They need human blood to function. Recharge your Titan. Eat a person.
Titanfall is legit. That might be my game of show. I'm pretty up on Infamous Second Son, which is a huge surprise to me. But Titanfall is really something.
Yeah, I mean, although it is their Kool-Aid that they put out for everyone to drink, I do think that the big thing that they hit from having seen it and seen it, you know, a couple times is not just getting mech-to-mech combat and person-to-person combat, but somehow managing to balance out and make it fun to have mech and person combat at the same time. That's pretty tough
They got speed with mechs, but then I also think they've sat back for the last couple of rounds of multiplayer shooters and looked at where people get pissed off and where people get bored. And have addressed that. Like, I think that the big sort of multiplayer match innovation is the evac thing at the end of the match.
That
is freaking awesome.
That is so, really keeps rad. It situated in that fiction is really, really
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, so I mean, like, if people haven't read about this, so like you know, in a Call of Duty match, you win a match and just the thing comes up with the scores and then you have to wait for your next game. In this, when you win, you've then got one life and 1 minute to get all of your team back to the evac point while the other guys are chasing after you, and they lost and they've got nothing to lose and they keep respawning. So it's like it's this like mad dash for the exit, and if you get out you get like mad bonus points and achievements and all kinds of stuff, but if you die you just drop on the battlefield and you're done. And it's like it's such a cool way to give like some actual sort of like a finale to a match that feels meaningful. And like, no one's ever done anything like that before. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to make a multiplayer only shooter, I think that's the one thing you need to have some feeling of persistence and consistency and believe in the world. The thing that I thought, as far as, you know, things they're doing differently that I thought was really interesting was the idea of the popcorn enemies,
AI enemies,
like basically creeps, from MOBA, but like,
totally.
That's awesome for me because I'm not very good, but I mean, I'll shoot. I'll pick off the. Let me get these guys. Let me get these idiots running into a wall. I got it.
And I mean, the thing is, it's a multiplayer only shooter in that there will be multiplayer in all modes, but there is a campaign section of the game with a story and narrative. And then there's multiplayer as well.
Right, but it seemed to me like I can't be in my campaign and prevent people from being there with me.
No, probably not. I mean, I won't speak for them, but it doesn't seem like that's the case.
It's right? Like the game we always reference that never came out.
The Crossing,
right, yeah. But it seems like that's, I mean, not to bring up the worst word, but with the cloud now and all this always connected, I feel like all these games... That's really the trend is there's not a multiplayer and single player mode. There's this one persistent thing that's always happening and you're in
that it. Reminds me of, I think, the most egregious buzzword of the show, which is Drivatar, which can fuck off.
Drivatar.
I get, you know, what's funny. We found out that Drivatar, they actually coined the term for Forza 1.
Really?
And apparently generations of humans said, that's dumb. I'm not going to do it. And then they went five games like, hey,
let's bring that back.
Avatar?
I think they should have gone with Avative.
I'll be really interested to see with Titanfall if they have the sort of depth of consoles to make a multiplayer only shooter viable. You know, you think how many 360s and PS3s are out there. That's easy to maintain an online community there. That's no problem. But I mean, there has to be some sort of critical mass point for the Xbox One, right? Where they have to have this many.
Will they be able to establish the concurrency to be able to make it work?
That's where you see them hedging their bets, like with the PC version.
But it's not the only one. I mean, you got PlanetSide and Blacklight on PS3. I mean, like, there's a bunch of multiplayer only shooters with this at the beginning of the generation.
Yeah. I mean, I think that everything going forward is going to be increasingly pitched as a multiplayer game.
Yeah.
This show in particular demonstrated that everything is blurring the lines between single player and multiplayer, to use that language. And part of that is because it's interesting. And the other part of that is this is a way for us to make sure that everyone owns a copy of this game.
Yeah.
And every game is open world now. That's really where everything is trending, is like there aren't levels. There aren't corridors. It's giant open spaces with multiple players in them. We're building sort of canvases upon which to have play experiences, which I'm really excited about.
All of this can be yours this November for $500.
It's a lot.
I thought it was a lot, and I had a lot of people telling me they didn't think that it seemed like too much.
Again, to reference my Twitter stream, everybody's like, iPad, y'all! iPad! iPads are that expensive.
But it's not an iPad. It's not as utilitarian as an iPad.
But it controls your TV, yo.
And you can't play games like you can on an iPad.
What?
Exactly! That's the point. I mean, like, so the iPad, they're just not the same, right? An iPad is what it is. But
I do think that maybe the iPad and phones have established a possible new normal for what people expect to pay for something like that.
Okay.
But I don't know. It's my immediate gut reaction was, and there was an audible sort of in the press conference.
I'm a hypocrite because I pre-ordered one.
Yeah. Oh, so did I.
Well, you know, the funny thing about this, a lot of people have talked, they're $100 more than PS4, not to spoil the PS4 thing, but it's $100 more. And, that obviously is pronounced, but it's not really that Microsoft is at a higher price point. It's that Microsoft is putting Kinect in every box, which it could
easily
count.
But that's not the messaging that they're putting out.
Yeah, but that should be the message. And that's like absolutely – they're doubling down on, we want everybody to have this tech so people will actually invest in it. But I can imagine a world where that new Kinect, however much it's cost to construct, the previous Kinect has retailed for about $100 consistently.
Right,
like,
but
maybe they drop that out of the box and they could compete.
Well, I was just going to say, America responds with, can I buy one without that, please?
Yeah. But I think the biggest problem with Kinect originally was it came out late and not everyone had one. So then it was like, why am I going to take the risk on this? And I think that they're trying to counter that because they still really believe it.
But it's so interesting how they didn't in the press conference they made no mention of the Kinect.
They didn't say the word.
No,
right.
No one.
And behind closed doors even there was a few mentions of the Kinect, but it really was sidelined.
There were demos on the show floor where you could play where the Kinect wasn't out on the table. It was in the box with the thing. So it's like, clearly it's not that essential for it to be looking at me.
Yeah.
I think the thing that the price tells me is that they're giving room possibly for the subsidized console that we have not stopped hearing about for the last 18 months.
Right. I was pretty stunned not to hear a alternative. Yeah. Like, it's $500 or
you pay.
They have 5 months and at least three big shows to
That's
go.
True. Somebody told me, and I don't know if this is true or not because I didn't verify it, but somebody told me that with Xbox One, you get a year of Xbox Gold for free. Did anybody else hear that?
I have not heard that. I would not be surprised from conversations.
So, I mean, right there, that's, I think that's a, if true, that is a price offset that's really,
I can't remember where I'm
60
at.
Bucks.
60 bucks, right?
Yeah.
I would say this, aesthetically, the redesign makes it a Kinect sensor that I would actually have on my entertainment sensor system, as opposed to like the one that they have right now. It's like,
cute, but it looks a little goofy.
I want all of them. I just want 7 cameras on it. I don't want to watch toddlers and tiaras if I'm not being watched by 7 cameras. Turn them all on.
Be able to command and give feedback at the same time. And then finally, no more Microsoft points.
No.
Yeah, no more Microsoft points. Hallelujah. So, amen.
Are they turning those into money and then they expire in a year? Is that what I'm hearing?
You got to sell against futures. That's what you got to invest deep now.
It's all run on Bitcoin.
I know that they expire at some point, but I don't know if they turn into
turning them into cash when they expire next November.
I think that was what it said, yeah.
It's like a year to spend your Microsoft points.
Yeah.
That's not the awful. It's weird to me.
As long as they convert to cash, I mean, who gives a damn?
More equal or greater than Xbox than what the points value was.
Wait, do they turn into money or do they just turn into nothing?
Turn into money.
They turn into monetary credit on Xbox.
And equal to or more. So what I say is, invest heavily in Microsoft
get
points.
Deep. Right.
Get deep.
Buy cheap point cards.
All right. So you know what we're going to do is, since we didn't get to Sony yet, we're just going to keep this crew. We're going to take a quick break so we can reorganize our thoughts. We'll take a momentary break while we all regroup, and then we'll come back and dive right into Sony.
Want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. And Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like Bioshock Infinite, Injustice Gods Among Us, Tomb Raider, and Dead Island Riptide. Here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want. There are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, you send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. And now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play. It's free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like a game you're playing, all you do is click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed and sign up today.
Jeff Cannata mastering the spelling.
Thank you.
Well done, sir.
It's useful.
All right, so Sony came out and did their usual thing of like, here's a half hour to put you to sleep. Hope you're still awake when we get around to the things you're interested in, which is amazing to me that they still are able to like have such a primed crowd, such a like walk up bottom of the ninth. You're the heavy hitter ready to like knock it out of the park and win the game for the home team. And they're like, so Vita guys, Vita.
Well, that's not fair. They did take the time to drive a knife into the heart of Drive Club.
Yeah.
Dude, you're so cruel. Why do you put it like that?
Well, let's see. They announced Gran Turismo 6 for PS3.
Yeah.
And they said Drive Club is free with PlayStation Plus. So
it could still be awesome, dude.
It could be. That game, I'm not saying the game is bad. I'm saying that they are like putting that game in the garbage.
Yeah, they devalued it out of the gate, right?
I understand, but or maybe they upvalued the PS4 because you get Drive Club.
No, I think what it is it's a tech demo gone wild, right? I think they started doing like, well, we're going to play around and do some car models, and
they
started playing. And I think
press conference?
Huh?
Did they show it at this?
No,
right. So
stores, I played it.
They didn't show it at the press conference. They announced Gran Turismo 6 and said, "Yeah, we're giving it away to make you less mad at us for the fact that we're charging for online now."
There was a lot of good Vita stuff here.
Yeah, a lot.
Really surprised that they did. I mean, they could have, to Garnet's point, they could have had a really punchy, like, 15-minute... Vita's doing fine. I mean, you
but
got
they didn't
show
do it
floor.
That way.
No.
The fucked up part was, like, they did Vita, and they had cool stuff to show, but they were like, video, mention. Okay.
That's the standard Sony press conference tech.
I know.
Yeah, it's like bizarre.
So messed up.
I was shocked on walking on the show floor and just walking down the two aisles of Vita games of all stuff I had never heard of.
I spent an hour there yesterday and played a bunch of them. There's some really good
amazing
stuff.
Amazing, clever, innovative, different kinds
like
of games.
Like Tearaway should definitely
Tearaway
be mentioned
awesome.
In game of the show.
One Stealth Inc. that was really cool. Stealth kind Inc. of like a 2D stealth platformer. Super cool.
Counter Spy. Did you see that?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Muramasa.
The Batman
awesome.
Game, Black Gate.
Yeah,
whatever.
Right.
So that's
Metroidvania Zone was pretty
Batman
awesome.
Batman game, I'm in.
The Batman game is the one that people actually care about this year.
Yeah.
And they wrapped up with the big announcement from Telltale that they get Walking Dead's next big
and
episodic.
And Walking Dead looks really slick on Vita. Like, it's like very, I mean, like, if you've played it on, like, iPad, and like, if you don't have like the brand new iPad, the frame rate's a bit janky, and like, but on Vita, it's super slick. It's really
nice. It's such a weird announcement to sort of hang Vita on, though.
I know,
you have all these Vita exclusive, and it's like, and just in case you don't have an iPad or iPhone or Xbox 360 or PC or PS3, big news.
You can get it here too now.
I have a question. Was there a big third party announcement for Vita this year? Because I don't remember.
Well, Black. Well, I guess Blackgate's not that.
Blackgate's
not
also
now.
Blackgate, the Final Fantasy stuff.
Okay.
Well, the HD collection stuff coming there. That's
I don't understand
cool.
why there wasn't more talk about the Vita as a add-on to the PS4, how it interacts.
They talked about it a fair bit.
There's a really good case you can make for Vita now. I mean, really, I try to
definitely
tell people
agree.
All the time, like, it's a really good system with a lot of solid stuff, and Sony was doing no favors, and maybe it's the... Maybe they didn't want it to steal PlayStation 4's thunder. That's the only thing I can think. But like, it was not a good,
a
good pitch.
Tearaway is a great example of a game that it really plays to the strengths of Vita in comparison to putting that same game out on something like an iPad or an iPhone or any kind of phone. It uses the things that make Vita in a way that's interesting and unique and different. And the same thing with Killzone is. You know, we got dual sticks here. You don't have to have virtual sticks. It's actually a really playable
shooter. So I think one
shooter.
Thing is they really want to have the attention on PlayStation 4 right now. They didn't want to get it caught up in a distraction, which was evident by the way they mishandled the beginning of the press conference. And then secondarily, I think Vita, like, it's well due for a refresh. Well due for a refresh. And so with them showing commitment...
I think it's well due for resuscitation.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the refresh. And I think that you know, when you're showing all of those games, plus the interaction, you know, the interoperability with the PlayStation 4, that... You got to think there's going to be there's got to be a new version of the hardware.
I really
coming.
Thought they were going to come out with a refresh $199 with an 8 gig stick in it, and then be like, "Here it is, we're doing it properly this time." Oh, and there's 85 games coming in the next.
I think
months.
They will, but I think it's next year.
Yeah.
Do you think that they're hoping that PS4 adoption, which they're clearly hoping will be aggressive, will pick up Vita?
Yes,
absolutely.
Absolutely. And then the interoperability becomes a big deal, and you want to go on the go. And then and in the meantime, they've got to have warehouses full of the existing model that they. Can you know do a bonus clear out?
The they've got to move sale. The price on it. It's way too expensive.
Oh, they've
got to
move the price on it. But they can move the price on the ones they have, clear them out, and then come back with a nice new fresh model that goes with the PlayStation 4. Everybody's
speaking
excited
of price
about.
Moves. Did Microsoft budge the price at all on the
not
refresh 360?
No.
What the
no.
hell?
Can you believe that shit?
Not a dime.
Yeah, bizarre.
I mean, maybe they feel like they can do that in the fall.
Yeah,
Well, they feel like they can do a lot of stuff right now. Yeah. Just pretty much anything they want to. Anyway, so then we had a bunch of PlayStation 3 things that were thrown around us. We had the Puppeteer Reminder. We had Rain Reminder. But again, like, same treatment. Like, here are some games that actually are on a huge install base that look really cool and have us excited that just sort of get, like, shoved out there so they get their little 5 seconds in front of it. Beyond Two Souls. There you go. Your little look at it. GT6. There's your look at it. Batman Arkham Origins. Maybe another few minutes on that.
When did Beyond turn into Metal Gear?
Right?
It was really
that video.
It's very strange, but kind of cool. It's like, yeah, you really are going to play 15 years of this chick's life, and I mean, then she does different stuff.
Justin, you checked it out, right?
Yeah, it was fun. So I liked it a lot, but I'm like a sucker for people. I didn't like Heavy Rain. It's only because it was a bad game. That was the only problem with it that I had was how.
At least you articulated that well.
No.
I have Justin write a lot of reviews for me.
I will take a game doing interesting stuff and not hitting everything 100 times over, you know, a game that's playing it completely safe. I did like Heavy Rain for that, but Beyond Two Souls seems like a cool refinement of it. They did one really neat thing with quick time events where you, rather than have a prompt, you use the right stick to continue the action. So time will slow down and you'll see her going for a punch like this. And
you can see this, everybody, right?
Yeah, everybody can see me punching forward. You press the right stick in the direction that the punch is going. So
if you're punching from left to right, then you move the stick.
Then you move the stick to right. But that's also, but the punch is like a very easy example. You have to kind of look at her body movement and her momentum, and it sort of adds another layer to the quick time event where it's not a binary. Like,
so does it feel more physical than a quick time? So
it does.
You feel like you're inside the game rather than looking for the prompts to come up. But I found myself failing a lot more often.
Me too, but nothing bad seemed to happen. So I guess that fine.
So it's like Heavy Rain then.
I thought lots of bad stuff happened in Heavy Rain.
One thing Quantic's always been big on is allowing you the opportunity to make mistakes without even, and yet sometimes you're not even supposed to know that you had a branch spot, that something happened and you made a decision, but it changed the way the outcome worked out.
Which is infuriating to me as a game player.
You don't actually need to, I think those systems are ingrained, as people who play video games a lot, I think those systems are ingrained deep enough in our minds that we don't need to lose points. I think you get that negative hit just from, like, knowing you didn't look as cool as you could have in that given moment.
Or that,
like,
my character died in a fire.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So after all of that, and, you know, I'm sure we'll come back to some of these. GTA 6, by the way, I got to check that out.
Gran Turismo 6?
I'm sorry, Gran Turismo 6.
Holy shit, 5. World exclusive.
World exclusive. By the way, there will also be a Grand Theft Auto 6 along with a Halo 7 and a Halo 9.
It was a weird moment. The Grand Theft Auto 5 moment during the press conference, that was
somebody was
moment,
trying to do a make good for somebody there. Yeah. Like, it was very...
Headphones. It comes with
$299 with a console headphones in the game.
I will say that those are some of the best headphones for a system I've ever used. Like, and the way that they integrate with the system is great. It was just a really weird moment.
Really weird. It was really weird.
Yeah.
And I'm super hyped for Grand Theft Auto, but I mean, there's not much to say since they only did, like, here's some screens and here's a little trailer. Here's some screens. It's the middle of E3. Here's some screens.
It was an awful long time in this press conference before anything that we hadn't heard about before was mentioned.
Because they didn't, aside from the obvious bombs that they dropped, they didn't have a ton of games to show.
Which was one of my chief complaints with Sony, is that they said, we've got 30 plus PS4 games in development and 20 of them will be out in the first year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Here's three.
And usually Sony, like, shows stuff pretty far in advance. Microsoft is the one that's a little more... Yeah. It's coming out this year. We're showing it this year.
There's only one game that we didn't know about, and that's had the big moment, big trailer, the Order 1886,
which looks super awesome.
I was so they open with, like, the quote from the King Arthur myths, and I'm like, please don't be King Arthur, please don't be King Arthur, don't make me deal with that for the next 2 years. But I thought it looked really good.
My only problem with it, and I got halfway through the trailer, and I'm like, I love this world. Whitechapel, love this time period. This is, like, my favorite aesthetic. This is where I always wanted Assassin's Creed to go to. It would be, like, the best.
Jack the Ripper
and all this stuff. I'm like, oh, okay, this looks great. And then you see the first person, like, loading up a machine gun. It's like, son of a bitch. Like, really? You can't make a new game? Yeah, you just have to put an old game? I mean, obviously, I'm going to play. I love the aesthetic, and it's very much a sort of complaint for, like, a world that we don't necessarily live in. But, like, anytime there's a brand new IP and a brand new world and it turns out to be a shooter, I just, it really feel that fatigue in me, like, really, really gets exacerbated.
It's going to be real pretty.
Yeah,
pretty. It was funny. I was watching it on. I was watching the live stream, and I had Twitter open, and Twitter was sort of like, "Oh, is it something? Is it what, Dishonored Sony?" Like, because they positioned it as a first party thing, and it was had that sort of Dishonored vibe, and everyone was like, "Oh!" And then it was like the sort of the slight disappointment. It was like, "Well, that looks really cool, but it's not exactly what I wanted it to be at that point," you know. And I think they handled it well. I just think maybe they shot a little early.
We'll
on
see
that
if
one.
Ready at Dawn is yeah. ready to be like the big triple A.
Oh, good for Ready. Studio. I was going to say good for Ready at Dawn because those guys have proven they can work within constraints and make a really good experience with those God of War games.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that the cool thing about the trailer was that it spit out a lot of questions.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
And that's.
There were several trailers in the two press conferences that were like, giant question mark, like the Mad Max trailer, which is weird because they showed it at the show. Yeah. I was like, is this a game?
And so Mad Max brings up an interesting point, which is that Sony presented a lot of trailers as if they were exclusives that were not. Like Mad Max was shown on stage, and I thought that was a PS4 exclusive until like 2 days later.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because all of a sudden it's, you know, it's there at the booth and you can go and see the game. I was like, well, why didn't they just show the game instead of this bizarre, enigmatic, like, well, what
Mad
kind
Max.
Of what it kind does, of game even is
by the way, he's an American now. Fail.
It makes me wonder why they had
Tom Hardy. His,
the
Tom
sort
Hardy.
Of they had the entertainment chunk
not American.
In the middle of the press conference, like the weird.
No, I think that the setting though, right?
Oh god, the weird, like when they get the tanned old guy in the suit to come out and talk before. I mean, like, don't do that.
And I mean, I they think that they have to talk about that stuff. I just would have thought that at this point they'd have a more unified strategy than what they're showing.
Yeah.
That was not. That was a section that was most assuredly not there for us. Like, there is somebody who makes a lot of money. Like, oh my god,
I'm not going to talk trash about it because it's fine. It was weird.
That poor son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to see the PS4? How about I tell you about Community?
So the order looked great. Mad Max was. Not there.
Well, so after the order, though, they did quick hits on Killzone, Infamous, Drive Club, and Knack, which were the four we already knew about, right?
Am I the only person in the world to think Knack looks interesting?
No, I think it looks really interesting. It was actually one of the big pieces for me, why I was excited. Mark, I'm a huge Mark Cerny fan.
It looks really British.
It does look really British.
It's fun to play. It's the cameo of... of the PS4 launch. I actually really like Cameo, so that's not a negative thing for me.
I have
but
a copy of that I've never played.
It's actually pretty fun for a launch game. It's going to feel like a launch game very fast because it's very simple. The whole concept is that it's for ages 7 to 75, they said. So it's very broad, very linear. It's like, hey, we can do particle effects now. We can do all these little bits. Let's put that in a game. In the same way that Cameo was like, we can put, you know, 30, 40 characters on screen at once.
And fur tech.
Yeah. So it's more, I think, starting with a look what we can do now. Let's make a game out of that.
Yeah.
So that's better to me than what I was worried. I was worried it was going to be Malice.
Those four games, that's their launch lineup.
Yeah.
Right. That's it.
Which ones?
One of them isn't.
Drive Club, Killzone.
Knack.
Infamous is not launch, I don't think.
Infamous isn't launch.
Infamous,
right.
launch.
Infamous is spring next year, which is too bad because that game, again,
the thing
looks
I
lo- incredible.
The thing I like about Knack is it feels, and this is very much the nostalgic old man in me, but having a game like Knack at the launch of the PS4 feels very much like connective tissue to other. It makes it feel like,
you know,
a PlayStation.
Maybe that's what it is for me.
A lot of those memories I have of, like, especially just playing PlayStation is like,
A new
Crash
platformer.
Bandicoot, you know, Spyro, I have a lot of good memories connected to PlayStation platformers.
It's definitely
Blasto,
cool. It's just very simple.
I think I hadn't thought about it from that. That's a good point, Justin. I think that probably clicked for me.
It's SCEE. It's very traditional Sony.
It's totally Ski, but so Ski deserves it. It's good stuff. And I love Mark Cerny in there, and he will make the game from a technical standpoint be a shiner. I mean, it'll definitely show off the hardware. And so then they have this tremendous indie presence on stage that was really unlike anything you've seen in a press conference before. They have Transistor, Don't Starve, Mercenary Kings, Octodad, Secret Ponchos, Raise the Dead, Outlast, Oddworld, New and Tasty, and Galaxy.
So out of all of that, the only real like showstopper I thought was Transistor. Transistor for a variety of reasons. Because first of all, Bastion was an Xbox 360 game, and they seem to have a lot of luck with that. And Transistor wasn't presented as a multiplat or as a single plat game that way.
Was that a sort of sideways swipe at Bastion? They seem to have a lot of luck with that.
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
No, I just like that. It's Microsoft published Bastion, and then Bastion went on to a bunch of other platforms and was really successful. It was never considered a PlayStation game, so that was like one of the big like betrayal tons or whatever you want to call it. Is that Transistor became the sort of showpiece for their indie showcase.
Ton of love for Octodad, which has just become like a weird internet sensation.
Folk legend, yeah.
I know, it is total folk legend, right?
How you can't look at that and be just happy is beyond me.
I had the good fortune of seeing Raise the Dead from Ragtag several months ago as part of like what I do now for indie publishing on mobile, and I'm excited for that. That's Stubbs the Zombie style and has a really cool vibe to it.
That game is nowhere near release.
I don't think it's not this year.
I played it at their booth. It's got a lot of interesting ideas. It is running like crap.
It's some of the disagreement on all points.
Right.
Yeah. What?
Some of the Stubbs the Zombie.
Oh, it's totally Stubbs the Zombie. Like it's got all of that. It's like Stubbs the Zombie with Plants vs. Zombies art style.
And then my good friend Jake Kasdahl, super props to them for Galaxy, which looked rad. I think it looked rad. I mean, it is what it is on the face. It's one of those, you know, it does what it says on the tin games, but that's awesome.
Yeah.
So overall, indie presence. Everyone got all excited about, but how much does that really buoy the PlayStation 4 in the world, in a real market?
I'm going to say not at all, but I'm
not at all.
I'm going to say that because the Vita has had that same presence all year and at the end of last year.
Guacamelee being the latest one.
It has not helped that system.
So much of E3 press conferences aren't about the future of the system from a business perspective. It's about mind share and winning the war for
that opinion. Was all about sympathy, right? I mean, you know, look how I don't know if you saw they had these PS Love Devs but things everywhere, and people were in
super
the t-shirts.
Cool shirt. Super cool
so
shirt.
They were positioning themselves of for the last 5 or 6 years we've been kind of dicks in various ways, but we're all about game design and we're all about investing in the future.
I mean, don't you think that's their position on every front? It's like every single thing we did wrong last generation,
we're acknowledging
and we're changing.
Yeah, and it's good because Sony traditionally has been really bad at manning up to its mistakes and actually, you know, talking to the audience. They were very good at talking at the audience for a long time, you know? Right. And this time they were actually...
Oh, they were talking to the audience this
time. Yeah, they were definitely, and they were, and you know, I mean, like...
It bordered on pandering.
They were, they were pandering, but there's been so often in press conferences, we afterwards talk about the missed opportunities and what they should have done if they were really in touch with the audience. And Sony this year, for once, they saw every opportunity and they actually took it.
Yeah,
you know, and like they were like, okay, the indie, like Microsoft's policy on indie is a little ambiguous, so fucking bring them all out on stuff. I mean, you could tell like a lot of the way that show was put together was looking at what Microsoft did wrong and say, how can we fuck with them? You know, which I love Sony being like that.
They certainly figured that out at the end.
Drama,
didn't they?
Yeah, it was a surprisingly fast pivot too, because a lot of that anger has just built up over the past few weeks since the announcement has been unclear.
I think a narrative has
been
forming against Microsoft in that respect for about 3 months.
No. The announcement was made when this story started. The specific things that Sony was talking about were in reference to Microsoft's announcement from like May 21st, and that was even crystallized.
But there were
after that.
Yeah. There were all those rumors, like because Microsoft said nothing, every rumor became fact. And honestly, a lot of those rumors were facts for months.
Yeah. It turns out that leaked document, pretty spot on.
The marketing
deck that was leaked late last year was like all the PDF pages that had all of the details on Always On. And
as much as the beginning of the Sony press conference was slow to start, to say the least. When they started firing those guns at Microsoft,
you mean on price and used games?
On price and used games, and sort of coming out and being like, we're gonna take this opportunity to be the poster child for trusting our customers and sort of, you know, that, call it pandering, but I've never experienced something quite like the feeling in that room where there was like,
oh, it was nuts.
Cheers and standing ovations and like, It was like a rock concert
for a
second.
Yeah.
And it was really smart of them. Now, at the same time, it was a little disingenuous because publishers are still going to be able to lock it down. What they did, though, was really bold as a platform holder to fire a shot across every publisher's bow and say, we're going to put up a slide that says, our platform supports used games. So you know what? If you don't support used games, that shit's on
you. That's on you. And it also kind of doesn't matter the details in the sense that they generated the narrative at that point.
They took the story.
Exactly.
And if you've been doing this for a while, you would know how significant it is that a Japanese company did that.
Sony haven't done that for the longest time.
They're not behaving like a Japanese company. This feels like a European PlayStation.
Well, Andy House is in charge now.
Like,
so
French.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that to be like to be flip or snip.
No. But I think it's really significant. I also think it's significant that you got Andy House at Sony still, and Phil Harrison is now at Microsoft, and they were the front men for PS1 and PS2, and now they're on opposite sides. And like,
it is interesting.
Phil did not have a good show, you know?
No.
What I also think is that you can look at the two now, and they're sort of analogous to sort of Apple and Google in a way in their approach to things, where Microsoft, bizarrely, is taking on the Apple role of we want to control the ecosystem. It's all about we want to totally control the experience because we think we know what's best for you. And Sony's sort of saying, do whatever you want. You know, which is not a Sony thing.
Yeah, load your ROMs.
That's not exactly what's a memory card.
Well,
the price was the first punch.
$400. $400
but no camera.
Which I think was also a reaction to Microsoft.
Oh, yeah, they were very clear about we're not going to spy on you. We're not going to do this. We're not going to say that.
There are some people at Microsoft that were very surprised
that
they came in at that price.
Yeah.
Well, but as some people have pointed out, that slide looks like it was put together pretty quickly.
It was the only slide in the entire presentation that had no branding.
Yeah.
And again, it doesn't matter. Like all these, there's a lot of discussion now of like, well, it doesn't have the camera, you know, PlayStation Plus now has a fee, this and that. Like, well, with Microsoft, you can look at it as you get $100 extra, this and that. It doesn't matter. The headline is, ours is $100 cheaper than theirs, and the same games are on it.
Right. The 360 demonstrated that consumers don't really recognize that they're being nickel and dimed.
Right. And for the first time ever, you're going to choose between two boxes that are going up at the same time, and one of them costs $100 less. I
mean, and that's going to be huge. As someone who worked in retail, and that is going to be a big, big deal.
The vast majority of the games are going to be on both and are going to look identical.
And especially when you're talking about the second wave of purchasers that are in Walmart and Target, and it's just sitting there shelf tagged $399 and $499,
right.
That's going to be a big difference.
So the thing that I assume that Microsoft is counting on is that they have an enormous live presence and a user base that has built into that ecosystem, not just from purchases, but from friends and connections. And that those are the people that are going to be saying, I have to get Xbox One for Call of Duty, which will be advertised as an Xbox One exclusive.
And the question is, will the online playing communities jump from one network to the other over $100?
Well, I've already had discussions with friends of like, you know, when we play The Division, when we play Game X, which system are you playing it on? Because I gotta know up front.
Well, you should go look at the sports blogs like Pasta Padre and Operation Sports. It's a huge subject of discussion right now of where they're going. But on the other hand, you know, look at the way the publisher reaction was to the different stances of the consoles. EA had a big presence at Microsoft, and there was not a whiff of anything. There was not a whiff of EA in that Sony presence.
Yeah,
right. In that Sony presentation.
And they were there was literally paint on the ground to get you from Xbox to EA's press conferences.
And that's the other. Wow. That was the other sort of untold story this year at E3, which is that Battlefield, which has been for the last 3 years presented as a Sony game.
Yep.
Like every commercial was a PS3 commercial. The DLC came out on PS3 first. That game sold 18 million units. And now that and Call of Duty Ghosts are being marketed as Xbox games.
Yep, it's a big deal. All right, so we still have, of course, Destiny to talk about. Let's take a quick break, though. Destiny, of course, was the big wrap-up for Sony. That looked fantastic, although, like, as a couple of demos did, it looked like you're going to crash right at the beginning of it. It's like, no, please don't crash.
I wasn't moved by like all the corridor stuff, but once they got outside, I thought it looked really cool.
So we're halfway through with the show. We'll take a little break. When we come back, we'll wrap up Destiny. We're going to bring Johnny in from Nintendo World Report and catch up on where Nintendo is at. And then we have a whole ream of games still to get through. So don't go anywhere. We can confirm we'll be right back. right, as promised, we will pick back up wrapping up Sony.
There's not enough show to contain all of this garbage.
I know.
Oh my God. We need a fourth E.
We'll do as much as we can. We'll do as much as we can.
All right.
Destiny. So, Destiny, I have to say that as a Borderlands fanatic, I was like wetting my pants by the end of it. I was like, ludification like this? Oh, yes, I want it. Give it to me now.
I hope the sequel is called Destiny's Child.
I think it will be.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
I'm pre-ordering
that
now.
Sound was the air going out of my sails.
That's the sound I was making in the first half of the demo.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Guys, listen. Here, I'm just a common video games journalist. I don't make games. I'm
just an unfrozen caveman lawyer.
I don't understand your modern ways. If you have a demo, and in half of it, there are 20 dudes fighting a space bug.
And it's badass.
And in the other half, you're walking through a dark hole with Jason Jones. You gotta leave with the second half. Just do the second part, and in the first part, I'd do anything.
But he waved.
Yeah, our crew was watching it from the hotel room, there was a point where someone said, "Are they still playing Destiny?"
Yeah.
I think they switched over to Halo.
It
looks a lot like Halo to me.
It's a lot
like Halo. Like even like the pistol, exactly how the pistol moved.
So Bungie game looks like Bungie game.
Well, but which is cool, I guess. I mean, I like Halo, but when you are like complaining about, well, we have to make Halo over and over and over again. We want to do our own thing. It's like, well, your own thing is sort of Halo, isn't it? With a Darth Sidious skin. I don't know. That's super cynical, and I hate myself for saying it. But
Superman, I'm going to slap your ass.
it looks like an awesome game, and I'm excited to play it. I just am more excited about Titanfall, and it's hard not to compare those two.
They did kind of set themselves up for comparison.
Oh, yeah, absolutely did.
And I think Titanfall had like more new, different. Like I've never done that. I've never wall jumped and leaped and landed on a mech and then jacked into that mech. And I don't know.
And you liked Guild Wars 2, right?
Yeah,
because I think that the rip of the page from Guild Wars 2 with the event system and bringing that sort of, you know, group shard into your little game is awesome.
Very
and
cool.
Doing that in a shooter environment like that is that's exactly what I want. It's almost like when you're playing Guild Wars 2, you're thinking to yourself, how could it be like, oh, it could be just like that, like just like what Destiny just showed me. And that's awesome.
I think it's going to be an awesome game for sure.
And that with the ludification of weaponry and hopefully the evolved way that we'll be able to like pull people into games and coordinate gameplay. Sign me up.
I kind of agree with Justin. I think that the coolest stuff about that game was nowhere to be seen in what they've shown so far. I think they're really holding back.
When there's so many questions, that's all I'm saying. When there's so many questions about what the game even is, because they've been pretty unspecific about all that. You have this time. Rather than have these awkward, like, was that even a conversation?
Hey, wave.
Wave.
Hey, look, there he is. Hey.
Jason is alive. Rather than do that, why not take the time to explain, like, what your game is? Like, what makes it so different from everything?
You have our undivided attention.
Yeah, exactly. This is the moment you've been waiting to, like, show this stuff, and it just seemed like such a weird way to intro it.
I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. I know some guys working on that. I'm excited for it. I think it'll be good.
I'm high for it.
Absolutely.
Even if Luke Smith is working on it, I'm still high for it. All right, so we swap people out a little bit. That's Corey Davis back here rejoining us. And then at the end of the table is Jonathan Metz from Nintendo World Report.
It's my distinct pleasure and honor to be here.
Oh, dude, glad to have you on.
Flattery,
and that is because
we'll get you everywhere.
We're going to talk now about some Nintendo.
Their unconference.
The big N. Yeah, by the way, I kind of feel a little bit vindicated by the fact that I think that what they did really worked great. I think that
you clearly weren't there. hated it. I'm sorry.
But you know what? From the outside,
what has happened to you, Jack?
I know.
From the outside,
you know what happened to me? They made me stand in a room and listen to somebody making fun of my heritage for 20 minutes.
At the opening of E3. They literally owned the first hour and a half of conversation because that's when they hit with all of their stuff.
Wouldn't they have done that anyway with a press conference?
Yeah, but that's the thing is that they didn't have to spend the money for the press conference.
Well, it's not my... I'm not happy that they fucking saved a buck by making me stand and shoulder to shoulder with a bunch of sweaty dudes.
And presentationally, they were off the hook of this is a stage show because it wasn't so much a stage
show. It was a stage show!
But it was, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Dressed up in cat suits. I mean, yeah, it was a stage
show. It was a press conference. It was,
but it wasn't.
It was a press
it
conference.
It was
it was great. It was the best of both worlds. It was a press conference with no announcements.
Yeah. So it was good. Oh.
Well, they had an announcement. I mean, fucking Wii Fit trainers in Smash Brothers, right. Bro. Yeah. One more thing.
One more thing.
Johnny, you better jump in here and start swinging pretty quick.
More accurately, one last thing.
Here's the thing that pisses me off. You come out on
the
stage.
One thing.
You come out on stage and you say, play the games. And then I stand there for an hour not being able to play them.
Oh, well, a whole hour.
Yeah, dude, it was a press. Don't tell me it's not a press conference if it is a press conference.
Right.
And the games that they showed are fantastic. They're great games.
Yeah, they are.
But don't make me listen to Mamma Mia. Who's standing there? It's like fucking Romper Room when he's looking through his little magical thing. I see Justin McElroy. I see Jeff Cannata. Oh, so many people out in front of me.
Tell me what your mommy and daddy do for a living.
If there is a fucking person doing an Asian accent, like, oh, look at the people. There would have been a fucking hue and cry of racism, but they have, Mamma Mia, it's so amazing, look at all of the people, and then he can't fucking say, he can't even say words correct, like he's saying like, these are announcements, I'm like, fuck you, I'm sorry, but fuck you.
He's rather Italian and having a stroke.
So Jeff, you're talking about the Wii U software showcase that was on the floor of E3.
Bring some civility back to this.
It was in the Nintendo booth before E3 actually opened. They let in some journalists to play some games, except they, like you're saying, they wasted about half the time that we spent in there just kind of bringing up developers to kind of say, hey, we made this game, we hope you like it. It was really very soft information. They
it was
were
very Japanese.
And racist.
Yeah, and it was all done.
Also racist.
Hey, at least there wasn't a rape joke.
But it was all done on this it was all done on this little stage right in the middle of the booth, and they just had people crowded in there, and we're all just standing there, so it's really uncomfortable. We were there standing for 30-45 minutes for really no good reason. They didn't really tell us anything useful, and then they turned us loose to play some of the Wii U games around the booth, but it was just jam-packed in there with way too many people, and there weren't nearly enough demo units, and it was just crazy, you know. And they said, well, hurry up and play the games because we're about to open the floodgates and let everybody else from E3 in here. And at the same time, they've got developers standing around at each demo station, and they're trying to do Q&A with the audience. You know, I'm over there trying to play Pikmin 3 before the show opens up so I can get impressions written. And Miyamoto is standing next to me, and people are asking him questions about Pokemon and when you're going to make a new Star Fox and this kind of stuff. And, you know, he's got a translator there who says, please keep the questions to Pikmin for right now, you know. And it was just a total clusterfuck.
I'm pretty sure I covered all that when I was screaming. But yeah, I agree with everything you said.
But,
you
know, but even before that, there was the Nintendo Direct. You know, they had this hour-long time slot blocked out at 7 a.m. Pacific. And all of us were getting up really early in the morning to go watch this on the internet because there's no place to go to watch it. So we're all just in our hotel. And this is probably the biggest moment of the year for us. You know, we're at NWR. We cover Nintendo all year round. And this is what we've been waiting for months and months and months. And Nintendo says, you know, we just wait for E3. We're going to show all this stuff. We're going to show the new Mario Kart. And it really wasn't that exciting of a presentation overall. They only used, I think, about 40 minutes of the thing. I mean, it was less than half as long as Sony's show. It felt like they didn't really have that many games to show. And
most of the games they did show are in 2014.
Well, the really exciting ones are, sure. I mean, I think, you know, considering where Nintendo is right now, their situation, where they would like to be, I don't think what they brought to E3 this year is really going to put them there. I don't think they did what they needed to do at
the show. Who the hell was it? I thought we were bringing Nintendo guy on. Who the hell are you?
Yeah.
I'm a realist.
I'm a true fan, which means that I give them shit when they deserve it.
I mean, I could not, like... Well, I could disagree more because I'm not that adamant about it. I disagree with you to the extent that I think that on the strength of Mario Kart 8 and Super Mario 3D World alone, that they have set the table for where Wii U needed to be when it launched, and have set the table to sell the Wii U the way they have sold Nintendo consoles consistently over and over and over again. That's huge for them.
Which is a Mario Kart.
Exactly.
And a Zelda, even if it's a Zelda we've already
lower
played.
Lower price point.
They'll probably do like price point stuff, right? But like, they have to set the table with those sorts of games to start the ball in motion. And they're late. They have put the hardware out without anything even close to the sort of library that it needed to have to support a console launch. And they're coming up to speed with it. Did you see the 3DS launch? The 3DS, same thing, right?
But is one game a month enough?
Is one game enough, month enough? If it's Nintendo games and it's those sort of games, yes.
I have a big problem with the logic of, first off, it's so frustrating that they had a year. They had a year where they could have energized things. They had a year where PS3 and 360 had gotten so stale and there was this waiting period that Nintendo got out in front of, and they could have really gotten some momentum when everybody else was waiting for the next big thing. But they didn't capitalize on it. They didn't have their franchises. And I really have I have a real suspicion of the argument that because they're releasing these seminal Nintendo franchises, that the Wii U sales are going to pick up. Because I don't know that they're – I don't know that there's a person who isn't enough of a Nintendo fan, they loves these franchises, that didn't know that these were coming. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't a surprise. This isn't new.
But they may not have bought the box until they were there, because they were like, I know they're coming, but I'll get the machine when there's enough of them that I could sit down and play games and not run out.
Yeah, but here's the big problem. I mean, Mario 3D World's not coming out till the end of this year. Mario Kart is sometime next year. Nintendo needs to sell Wii U's now. And it's not just for their own sake, it's for the third parties. If they want to have licensed development on the system from other companies, then they need to have a platform base. They need to have a user base. They need to have systems where people can play these games on. And that's why you're seeing things like Rayman Legends get delayed 6 months for no reason except they want to develop it multi-platform and release them all simultaneously, because they know if they release that as a Wii U exclusive, they're capped at, you know, maybe a million sales if they're extremely
lucky.
Don't
you think, though, that the extended lifespan of the 360 and PS3, which I think the price pointing for the new machines plus them, they're going to inevitably be constrained because of the yield level on the chips that go in both of them, means that 360 and PS3 are going to truck through this holiday and into next year for sure very strong. And that is a pretty consistent base, as we've seen with like the Deus Ex conversion for Wii U, that you've got a great opportunity to still have good games coming into the Wii U ecosystem.
Let me just say this. I think, first of all, the games that they showed are fantastic. I had so much fun playing Mario Kart.
Dude, I had a blast.
Mario Kart's
awesome. And Johnny's going to shoot us down in a minute. I freaking loved it.
But let me just say this. It's wonderful to see these franchises in HD finally. And they look gorgeous. Donkey Kong looked gorgeous. Mario Kart looked gorgeous. Even the Super Mario World with the cat suits. Super fun. Super gorgeous.
What do you mean even? That was the best one.
You feel like a game like that might not benefit as much from the HD, but it really does.
I thought it did.
No, I agree. But here's what pisses me off.
You got a lot of things that piss you off,
man,
brother.
Luigi hurls a few racial epithets at you.
He threw meatballs right at my face, and they were a spicier. Here's the thing.
That's a spicy meatball.
Exactly. We didn't really talk trends this E3, but I would say one of the biggest trends is tablets. Every goddamn game has a tablet app, has a tablet thing, except the fucking console that comes with a tablet.
Right.
The whole point of Nintendo is we got this tablet that's a controller, and did any of their games benefit? Fucking Mario Kart, it's a giant horn button. Are you joking?
Dan Reichert told me that, and I thought he was fucking with me. Like, you made a console built around a tablet, and the screen is a horn?
Yeah, it's ridiculous!
It's a button, sir?
And, dude,
clearly you've never driven in L.A. You need that horn.
That like gamepad could be used for, like, double dash functionality, where you have one person who's just doing the item utilization, and another person driving with another controller.
Anything other than a horn. Anything other than the parent's nightmare.
Yeah. And you notice you could do that in the menus between races, too.
So you have the Division showing amazing tablet stuff. You have Battlefield showing amazing tablet stuff. You have literally almost
Assassin's Creed 4.
Almost every demo I went into behind closed doors, they were showing a smart glass implementation or some sort of tablet implementation that was so clever and so interesting and made me so excited. And except the one fucking company that has a tablet built into their console.
Nintendo fan, I'd just like to let you know I'm giving up. I feel like I've been jumped on by a band of hungry
wolves. It doesn't make any sense. Your whole job is to show me why this console is special. What's special about this console is that it comes with a fucking tablet.
Yeah. I mean, we're looking at a full year of games released for Wii U. You know, I think we know about every game that's coming up through November or so. And other than Nintendo Land, which comes with a system for most people, I still don't really know that there's a really good showcase for why this system has a tablet controller that comes with it. And if it's going to come from anyone, it's going to come from Nintendo, and let none of the games that they showed this year really take good advantage of it or use it in any kind of interesting way. And it's like, that's clearly a large portion of the cost for the system. It's why they can't, you know, sell this.
Can we let go of the tablet then? Because here's my thing, is that maybe I've just gotten to the point where I've already accepted that the tablet was a gimmick and it hasn't been picked up on, it hasn't worked. And you said, what makes this special? What makes this system special is it's the system I can play Mario Kart 8 on. I can play Super Mario 3D World. I can play Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze on. And that's what makes it special. And it's always what made Nintendo platform special are those games.
I don't want to play Donkey Kong Country with a Wiimote and Nunchuck. I don't.
You can play. You don't? It was a blast. Erla and I played it together and we had a blast with it. It was so fun.
You can play it on the gamepad. And I think they're going to have to add...
None of the stations had that.
Yeah, there was one. You had to only play it... I mean, it wouldn't show it on the TV screen. You can only play it... You can only look at it on the gamepad, but they were showing the remote play. But, I mean, the good thing about that...
Oh, you should play remote play.
Well, you could roll with the button rather than have to waggle. But the other units, they were having... They had Wii Remote and Nunchuck, and you still had to shake to roll. And I'm like, you guys are going to add Pro Controller support for this, right? And all the reps are like, yeah, I don't know. I don't really know. And I was like, you know, the feature that people wanted so badly, they hacked it into the last game you released in the series?
Yeah. You know, I could really go for a Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze right now.
Sounds delicious. It's kind of muggy in LA. That would be really super refreshing.
Add a little rum.
I hope you heard me preface all that by saying the games look great.
Well, that's what I'm trying to dig out here.
It doesn't make any goddamn sense to me.
As long as they're not just pitching something that we've already seen on other consoles, I'm excited. You know, like, I don't want to hear about their port of some other game that I played on the Xbox ever again.
They got away from that at least this year.
Yeah, and so we're at least hearing about what, like you mentioned, those unique titles that are really, that's what's got to drive if they're gonna be successful.
And really,
You're
not going to mention the Zelda at all. You're not going to mention it. You're not even a passing.
I would say that was
screenshot.
That was a disappointment.
Something, anything.
That was a disappointment. Although A Link Between Worlds.
Yeah, that looks really good.
It does look very good.
Yeah.
And I think for fans right now, especially, like, you know, here's a case where we just had Radiant Historia come out recently. And so isn't that the name of the big?
Well, Radiant Historia is an awesome DS RPG. I'm surprised you've played it.
That name come to mind? What was the name of the big book that has all the Zelda information in it?
Oh, Ni No Kuni? Oh, you mean the Hyrule Historia.
Yeah. So we just had that come out, and there's been a ton of attention now because now we have this timeline for the Zelda games. And here is a game that's going to be coming out this fall, and it's got that link to it.
Link to the past.
It has that connection to it. That's huge. Yeah.
I'm a little, it bums me out a little bit, and I have to express that I'm not a super huge Nintendo fan. I like a lot of what
you don't
doing.
Like Super Nintendo.
No, I'm not a Super Nintendo fan. So many buttons, you know, just give me B and A, right? No, I it is a little it bums me out a little bit that at some point this company that built itself on creating these amazing experiences and these new worlds and seminal experiences of so many of our childhoods at some point resigned itself to iteration, that resigned itself to not creating as many new things and just sort of perfecting and honing the things that it had already done. And that kind of bums me out a little bit. I mean, I can't think of the last – I mean, is Pikmin the last, like, great – Nintendo franchise.
Well, I mean, they've got Wii Sports and you know, stuff like that is
not in the same thing.
Legitimate, but not as a unified world. You know, not really new characters. Not a new place that you can go and really have an adventure in.
Mm-hmm. But my counterpoint is Cat Mario is awesome.
Mario,
when you have that pounce attack moment, it is that like stupid childlike grin on your face moment that is
they make great games.
Awesome. Absolutely. Part of playing.
I will buy it, but I need to be assured that Luigi won't get a dime of it, because that bigot is not getting one penny from me.
I think on the micro level, you can look at any one of the games Nintendo showed and say, this is really high quality, and this is exactly the kind of thing I want to be playing on Wii U for, you know, at least a couple of weeks after it comes out. But on the macro level, it feels like there's no viable strategy there. It feels like they don't really know how to sell the system. They're not even really sure what it's supposed to do in the first place. And it feels like they're really losing footing. I mean, right now Wii U is not even competing with 360 and PS3. No, how's it going to do once the PS4 and Xbox One are out?
One other quick little thing. Was anybody else shocked that there wasn't a price cut? I mean,
yes.
$50
cheaper than the PS4.
Now you're $350. And I mean, maybe you could say we don't have to right now, but man, it'd be good to sell. No, those bad boys wouldn't.
That's a big deal. They have to 6 months ago. I mean, they released it. It was too expensive in the first place. You know?
Right.
It's part of the reason it hasn't been selling well, because people don't really see the value there.
Although the trailer for that X game,
looks awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
And those guys will make something really awesome.
I mean,
awesome.
That's the sequel to Xenoblade, and right. Xenoblade is one of the best Wii games, for sure, one of the best games of the last generation on any platform.
And Bayonetta 2 also, we should mention that.
I'd say, awesome. I feel like, though we've known about that, you know, the Wonderful 101 still looks awesome, mm-hmm. and Bayonetta 2 was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really Bayonetta. It was very ridiculous and
very
and awesome fight on cool top looking. Of the back of a jet plane, yep. and all of exactly what you wanted out of it, running a very high rate of speed. You know, it's there. Mm-hmm. It's there. But yeah. you sort of already knew about it, and you're like...
Yeah, I mean, Bayonetta 2 looks really cool, and it's definitely different from the other games Nintendo is showing, but at the same time, again, like on the strategy level, it's hard to say that Bayonetta 2 is going to do anything to kind of change the fortunes of that right. system. Like, the first one didn't even do well enough for Sega to consider publishing the sequel, so...
And then they come back and make it as a Wii U exclusive.
Yeah.
It's an... Yeah.
Should buy him some street cred, at least. I think it'll be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, so we have made it through the pressers. We still have two more segments to go, which means we still have a lot of games to talk about. We'll keep Corey around so we can talk about, since we're talking about action games, we'll talk about some Ninja Gaiden when we come back.
Hell yeah.
And then we'll also start to get into some of the games we haven't had a chance to talk about yet that are really high on our big games of the show list. We still have a lot of the EA stuff. I want to talk about some FIFA 14 Next Gen that I got to play. There's The Division. There's the announcement of Mirror's Edge. There's Watch Dogs. There's like a whole slew of stuff. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
This episode of Week in Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
All right, we are ready for a little resetting of the table. I brought Arthur in, although after the way we were skewering things, we might have thought Arthur was here, like, ripping
Whoa,
into
the air. Why have nice things to say?
But we're going to let Johnny actually tell us about some of the Nintendo games that were good, since somehow that got swept under the table.
Yeah.
So what did you guys, overall, from Nintendo World Report, as far as games... come away from the show thinking?
You know, one of the games that I was really curious to play this year was Pikmin 3, because they showed it last year, and it was a really kind of a bad demo last year. They had us doing some weird gyro aiming with the gamepad that didn't really work, and by the end of the show, they'd taken away all those and given us Wii remotes instead. And I think the game's come a long way, and they actually showed some new mechanics. Like, the other two astronauts, so you have three overall, and the other two follow you around like Pikmin, and you can throw them like Pikmin, but they do different things.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so they'll run on autopilot. If you throw them up there near a group of Pikmin that are buried in the ground, they'll just automatically start plucking them up. And you can, because you have two in tow, you can actually throw both of them up to a higher ledge that your main guy wouldn't be able to get up to, and then switch control and warp over like Lost Viking style to one of those, and then you can take one of those and throw the second one up to an even higher ledge. So it started to like kind of, you know, get my brain boiling about all the different puzzle possibilities and the exploration. And there's some really good multiplayer modes in there too, but they're all local, so I don't know how much they're actually going to get played, unfortunately. But that game really looks fun. You know, the new Pikmin types, I think they're doing some really cool stuff. Yeah. As far as Mario Kart 8, I mean, I'm a big Mario Kart fan. I've played pretty much all of them, and I enjoy all of them. But I think the big new feature that they show this year, the anti-gravity stuff, it was really exciting when we saw it in the Nintendo Direct video, and then we went to go play it. And because the camera tracks you so closely and it follows you as soon as you change surface that you're driving on, it really doesn't feel any different. You know, like
right.
you see the wheels turn
that.
Into
you're
into
still sucked
hover
down
pads.
On the you're still sucked
yeah,
down
just,
on the track.
It just flips the world right. upside down, but you're not upside down.
Exactly.
It doesn't feel
so
like
so. You see things
down.
On the walls and the ceiling, but you don't really interact with them.
Yeah.
So if I don't know, it's not nearly as exciting in practice as it seems like it would be in theory. And the other thing is, I mean, Garnet, you mentioned that it reminded you of F-Zero, which is a series that's been dormant for a long time. But the demo that they had of Mario Kart 8 here is running so slowly. It reminds me of when they showed Double Dash back at E3 2003, and it was running at like 25cc. And, you know, everybody was telling Nintendo, you've got to speed this up. And I wonder if it's because
is it a performance problem or a design issue?
Well, it might be because the game's unfinished, and my guess is that they wanted to lock down the 60 frames per second, you know, and so they kind of reduced it to a speed that they could do that, and then between now and release, they're going to be tweaking that until they can get it. But it's so slow, it was hard for me to enjoy the demo, actually, because it was just kind of boring.
I suppose I don't really need to ask, but that's 2014, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably early, but yeah.
And Super Smash?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thrilled about Smash Brothers. I'm a huge Smash Brothers fan, but that wasn't actually at E3. They showed some really awesome
videos.
Video. Yeah. No, I'm super hyped up about it, but that's going to be like the end of next year, so it's a long way out.
All right. Well, there's a lot of stuff that was shown that is a ways out. I think we should hit on some of the ones that were big stories. Obviously, for me, listening to around the Twitterverse and all that sort of stuff, The Division seemed to capture everyone's attention.
So
it was sort of the game that, you know, if you knew about Destiny and Titanfall and had your expectations for things, I don't think The Division was on anybody's radar like that. So then when that demo came up, you're like, oh.
But it seems to be doing the same thing that you are excited about Destiny doing, and I'm excited about Destiny doing, which is you're in your little co-op group.
World
and
events.
You walk around the corner, and all of a sudden, and it's interesting because I guess, you know, if you accomplish a task, you have to set off a beacon, and that beacon alerts people in the world that you're about to set off a beacon, and they get assigned to come and take you down.
See, that wasn't clear to me if that was like mobs, basically, if to use MMO terminology, or if those were other players.
Well, they said at the very end, oh, there's another, get ready for PvP, guys, here comes some players.
Okay, see, the weird thing about that game when they showed it to me is that I felt like they didn't do a good job of explaining what it was, because initially I thought it was just an MMO, and that is not what that game is.
It looked a lot like Watch Dogs to me when they showed it at the press conference.
Well, just the terminology that they use and that it was massive making it, it just made me think, oh, great, it's a pretty MMO, but that's not, it's like, it's an open world RPG, and I realized that that sounds like semantics, but there's such a major difference between those.
Yeah, I think it's going to be dynamically throwing people into your game rather than just, you know, walking around and seeing people jumping up and down and having these big hubs where there's thousands of people. I don't think that's what it is. It's I'm all for that. I think that, especially with the fiction of that world, which is sort of desolate and uninhabited, to have it be sparsely populated and then dynamically populated really is exciting. And what they showed also with the tablet implementation was awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I see, like last year we saw tablet stuff a lot and it just all seemed like bullshit. But what they're showing here, I mean, during the demo at their press conference, they showed the drone and they implied that it was another player playing, which is fine. But then when I saw the presentation at their booth, they actually showed that full tablet integration, and it is the full, it's a full version of the game that you're playing.
Yeah, you're seeing it from this kind of top-down drone perspective, but everything is live, real-time. Every movement of the enemies and the players is tracked on the tablet, and you can interact with them live, throw them buffs, heal people. You know,
and you earn enough points to get offensive capabilities, and it's a 3D world. It's not like isometric like sprites or something.
It's not like the Battlefield tablet, which is sort of just like an abstract map.
Yeah.
This is a full 3D version of the game. It's stunning to look at.
And it actually gives you some reason to want to be always online.
Yeah.
Which, besides just, you know, giving your information away.
And this game will be always online.
Well, and points of interaction. I mean, this is something I was actually talking about at dinner the other night with a couple of friends, is that I want an evolution of games to where if I'm playing, and the reason that The Division is appealing to me, to where when I'm at home and I have a long window to play in, I can play in the world and enjoy the game in one way. And when I'm at the office and on lunch, I can pull out a tablet and play in another way. And maybe when I'm on, you know, queue at the movie theater or something, I can pull out my phone and just have even a different sort of quick interaction. But I like the idea of having this like rich game experience where I can come into it from different ways and have real designed pieces of interaction, and not just like, oh, well, here's, you know, the car configurator for your phone, because that stuff feels like throwaway.
Or here's like the shitty side story prologue thing.
Yeah,
like,
I don't want the throwaway crap.
It's a way to meaningfully engage with the console game in arenas that aren't the console game.
I really liked the tablet implementation in Dead Rising 3 as well, because it skins your phone as a phone, and you actually get phone calls on your phone from people in the game.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's some majestic shit right there.
And awesome. In the world, you can discover ringtones and wallpapers for your fake phone that's your real phone. It's pretty great.
And you can
send
airstrikes.
You can send airstrikes. You get apps. You find apps, and it populates your phone with apps.
I can't wait for all these games to kill my fucking cell phone battery.
Right? While you sit on the couch with it plugged in, you know?
Yeah. But that's the thing that was really interesting to me. It was like starting to see some of the reasons for why the hardware developers made the choices they did. I think that's the big mistake Microsoft made, is that they didn't put, hey, here's the difference, the reason why we're forcing you to be online, the reason why we're using a big portion of the hardware we've built for that service.
Well, they did the opposite of Sony. They didn't get out in front of it and tell the story. They let the story be dictated to them.
Exactly.
And that, you know, that is one of the points that's come up, and you know, you think the word has been like the value of it, and then people misequate that to monetary value. The value in the always on is like, what does it allow designers to do, and what does it allow game makers to do as far as, you know, knowing the situation that everybody who's in the game world is in?
Well, that, and they sort of alluded to like even graphical capability and things like that, but I just didn't see any of that. Like, what does that mean to me as a developer? How do I bank on that for the things I'm thinking about doing in the future? I don't know yet.
Right. I mean, like, they talk a lot about Azure during the May 21st thing, and this as well, like in cloud compute, but they didn't explain very well what that means to developers. And so far, the Titanfall guys are the only ones who have really made a substantive comment on what that enables them to do, which is that there's zero AI happening in a player session. All of that is happening on Azure, which means that talking with an engineer, that frees up a considerable amount of CPU resources. They're not running enemy player AI. They're not running any of the world scripting. All of that stuff is coordinated through the server.
And, you know, I know people get upset when you start talking about cloud in a positive way because people are so bizarrely cynical about it. But I think that what we saw at this E3 is a bunch of games running on souped up PCs, and where these consoles are going, if everything goes right, is that they'll be able to do stuff that souped up PCs cannot do because of the resources that are offloaded. And that's where having a giant company like Sony or Microsoft owning the platform is going to benefit these platforms potentially.
It damn well better work out like that, because I feel like looking at the state of hardware and the state of technology and the way things have been advancing, that these boxes are not remotely future-proof for 5 years.
Oh, that's true.
That's how long the console generation is going to last this time.
Yeah, I mean,
what I've heard is that this is a five-year generation, not another eight-year.
But I mean, you can literally build a PC with that those specs for like $400.
And that's what we were looking at. Like all the stuff that we were looking at, this like all these next-gen games. But that's we're at the beginning. You know, what right now, all these people were designing games on PCs because they didn't know the final specs. And in next year and the year after that, I think you're really going to see what if this promise can be delivered upon.
So rather than getting all esoteric, how about this? Last year's Division was Watch Dogs. How excited are you about Watch Dogs now with one more demo in the can? Was a cool-looking demo, still has the promise?
I heard the craziest shit, which is that you can hack into other players' worlds and then hack all their data and steal it.
Hack all the data. Interesting. I have heard the hacking into other people's games and messing with their game and like that's very much a part of it because it fits within the, you know, the creative idea of the game of like all these people like who are hackers. And
I'm glad that they're supporting that sort of thing. Like the certification has in the past ruled out a lot of those types of things as far as being able to give a semi-negative experience to someone you've destroyed in the game or something like that. I've always had a lot of ideas for how you could really get people excited about different mechanics and features. Doing interesting, unique things like that, but they're usually very strict about the control on those sorts of things.
It's never so. I'm hoping that Animal Crossing.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that third party developers get a really good idea of what those types of things are that they're going to be supporting.
Like, I'm super into the idea of Watch Dogs, and last year it was definitely the thing that like really wowed me. But I just want to play it. At this point,
me too.
I'm just tired.
I think everybody.
That's the danger. That's the danger of announcing stuff too soon. Like, you know,
and I mean, the Ubisoft press conference this year clearly framed Watch Dogs as their successor to Assassin's Creed.
Yeah,
and they're following the Assassin's Creed playbook, like right down to the trailer that they made.
And how crazy is it that a numbered sequel to Assassin's Creed has such an underwhelming response? Like I feel like nobody's talking about
it. Did you get a demo for it?
I
was
didn't.
Really impressed by it. Much more than I was expecting. But I'm actually one of the weird people who liked Assassin's Creed 3.
I liked it too.
I played it on Wii U. I played it a few months after the fact for the most part, and I think I got the benefit of some of the patches that were post-launch, you know, and so I didn't have quite the buggy experience that other people did, but the naval combat in particular is so compelling and so interesting and fun to do and fun to look at. So the fact that they're taking all that stuff, they're giving you more upgrades to the ship, they're giving you more control over the way that you aim the cannons and the, you know, the, a lot of different options in combat. Mm-hmm. You can like directly control one of the swivel guns while your crew is boarding another ship, so you can take out the captain from the gun while everybody is kind of jumping over the edge. I thought it was great, and it's totally open world. You can sail that boat anywhere in the Caribbean, set anchor at any point in the ocean, and just jump off the ship and go wherever you want.
It's boss gated. It's like there are islands that like you could theoretically get to, but there's like a powerful ship.
That's
it keeps you from getting there.
That's cool.
I felt really bad for the team because if you are one of the ballsy ones that decides to show a game on next-gen hardware on stage, like there is the risk of what happened to the Assassin's Creed 4 demo on at Sony happening to you.
Mm. Yep. That was a major bummer.
And maybe pirates just aren't as... They're just not having the connection that they expected.
I mean, I think it looks rad. It's just like the seventh Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah, it's different now. It's different.
There is some burnout.
All right. What else did you guys get onto that was got you?
I have to talk about, if you're going to talk about games of show, for me, Witcher 3, Division, and then the third of the trifecta for me, which is ironic considering it was my biggest disappointment last year,
is
Elder Scrolls Online.
Yeah, like that game has the biggest year over year jump of anything I saw.
Shit.
I heard the first person perspective wasn't working.
Yeah.
No, it's not working yet, but
they were upfront about that. They said they're still putting it in.
Yeah, you know, the thing that makes it look like an Elder Scrolls game.
But
the one they actually built.
But it plays like an Elder Scrolls game. It's like somebody got my letters. Like, here's what I wanted about an MMO to be, which is a fucking role playing game where everybody in it is a player. It's a role playing game. You know what? That doesn't have cooldowns.
Ooh.
There are no cooldowns in the game. You don't ever watch your icon waiting for it to proc. That's glorious. It plays like an Elder Scrolls game.
That would set it apart from Skyrim.
I mean, I don't know. The idea of like Skyrim is something I use to get away from people.
Well, and you can still play that. But, you know, it works like Skyrim. If you have the magicka or stamina to do a skill, you can do it. You can spam that skill as many times as you want, should you want to. Every door in the game you can open and go into like it's a single player role playing game, not like a MMO where if the door's closed, you pretty much can't get in that place. There are just items in the world like you would find in a single player role playing game, bottles and cheese and bread and shit.
So it got to be cheese wheels.
My concern then is that they're trying to do all this Elder Scrolls stuff, which is great, but is it just going to be like a less good Elder Scrolls game?
That's certainly possible. From what I played, the dialogue is all there. You can make interesting decisions like you can in a single player role playing game. You know, if you're in a group, everybody gets to make their dialogue choice and make their decision, and it pertains to what's happening to them. So it's not like Star Wars where, you know, one person's decision gets randomly chosen to be the one that takes. And everything is voice acted. It feels like a fucking Elder Scrolls game, which is exactly what it didn't feel like last year, and why I got so mad.
And you can get teabagged by a 12-year-old.
Isn't the whole point of?
I would agree. You guys are being cynical, but
I'm not cynical. I would agree with you that it is the biggest year over year jump in a game demo, and it does definitely have the Elder Scrolls DNA in it now. And
absolutely,
that was the big problem.
Before. I'm skeptical, but I'm definitely willing to be proven wrong.
Did you play it?
No, I did not. I had time to play games yesterday, basically, and that was not on the list.
Well, I have to say, it could be a vertical slice that fools me, but from what I played, I wanted to play lots more.
Cool. So on the role-playing game front, how did you feel about the Final Fantasies?
I mean, they look
Final Fantasy
great. 15's
real pretty.
Yeah.
15 looks really pretty. Like, look,
I just don't understand
versus
the whole
13.
Hopscotch.
The hopscotch is that Versus 13 has been on the books for forever.
I get why, but it's just such a bizarre.
That's like the final blow to the PlayStation faithful on Final Fantasy. Like, that was supposed to be the one remaining, like, Final Fantasy exclusive for PS3. And now it's a multi-platform.
I mean, they haven't really talked about it being a PlayStation exclusive since, 2006 or something like that? So
was it 2000? I think it was 2008 is when they announced it.
But I think the promising thing here is that, look, that Nomura actually announced his next game. So clearly 15 must finally be on a real strong productions track to be, hey, we're going to pre-prod on Kingdom Hearts 3, which Kingdom Hearts 3, awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it even showed a little bit of whether it was, you know, faked up or not game in game. You know, look, this is like we're actually working on Kingdom Hearts 3. It's not just we're going to announce it. This, granted, it's Square, so it'll still be forever away. But then and 15 looked really cool. I think 15 looks really fun. I'm still super hyped for that.
I just can't get excited about it because it just seems like a giant question mark.
And if you didn't play it, and I didn't see a lot of people playing it, Lightning Returns is badass.
It's pretty fun.
Lightning Returns is really cool. It has the twist to it now where you switch jobs and each job has its own active time battle meter. And then you're using skills same sort of thing. Instead of worrying about cooldowns, you're using skills as you want to. And that can be attacks, blocks, and magics. and then switching between jobs so that you can like let your different bars refill. It's freaking badass. It was really cool. The only thing that was hard is blocking is really, it's a really tough window to get the block right in. But I think they could still balance that out.
Yeah, and blocking uses some of your energy. So
right,
you can't just go up and spam attacks because you have to reserve enough energy just in case there's an attack coming that you have to block.
So did you play it?
Yeah.
Did you like it? Yeah. I was like, this is a really cool twist on their battle system.
It's really fast paced. Yeah.
I really liked that a lot. Okay, so I guess let's wrap up this section because we'll do the last one. Will be a long one. Okay. We'll get some more people in. We'll get ready to come to the conclusion. I'll still talk about FIFA Next Gen. We'll still talk about Mirror's Edge and then whatever else you guys want to get in as we come down to the wrap up segment of E3 2013 on Weekend Confirmed. I'm going to let Jonathan step in here for a second because he has some finishing moves set up because he knows the show.
Yeah, I've listened to every episode of the show. I just want to thank Garnet for having me on Weekend Confirmed and being a great example and inspiration for us. So I host a podcast called Radio Free Nintendo. We just passed 7 years of weekly production. And
wow, congrats on that.
Thanks, man. We're coming up on 350 episodes later in the summer. And I always tell people that our show is basically your show, but all about Nintendo. Well, not all about, but more focused on Nintendo. I just want to thank you for letting me be here. It's been an honor and
way to hold down the chair, dude.
Oh, thanks, man. I've been really nervous. And I want to give quick shout outs to my compatriots, James, Lindy, Guillaume, and Greg. Also, congrats to our home and away teams at Nintendo World Report. They did an awesome job.
Cool. Best spot to pick up Nintendo information on the internet and subscribe to their podcast. All right. When we come back, we will have the rest and final stage of E3 2013 on Weekend Confirmed.
Brick wall dedication, post affiliation, added representation, seen the staff presentation, they lies the foundation, common sense collaborations, peace to all of your Haitians.
If money makes a man strange,
we got to rearrange that.
Smooth jams, definitely, to take us into the final stretch here. John Davison has jumped back on the mic.
Hello.
As has Justin McElroy.
Oh, what a pleasure it is to be back. Thank you.
Easy for me to say. And I've got a list of games for us to rock through here, but I don't want Justin yelling at me on the phone, so we're going to go right to Saints Row 4.
Saints Row 4, Magic is back.
No backstabbing here, no railroading.
I mean, I fixed it. They originally, Saints Row 4 was on our original editor's choice list. At some point, it was removed. I assume it was a clerical error. that's the only thing that makes any logical sense, because anything else is too terrible to even contemplate.
I still have to say, it's one of the strangest things to be standing at the edge of the Square booth and look back and see like Final Fantasy 15 playing on a video screen with Saints Row 4 kiosks in the foreground. That's weird.
It's Saints Row 4. Great. Okay. Saints Row three was one of my favorite games that year, if not my favorite. And then they put superpowers in it. They
superpowers had and mechs.
They put superpowers and mechs. And there weren't mechs in the demo that I played. They're basically, it was just like a little small playground type area for you to run around in with superpowers. And it felt awesome. The left bumper is super speed. You're running through the streets. If you hit a car, it flips end over end and flies out of your way. You can leap over buildings. You know,
who needs next gen crackdown? We got
I mean, that's exactly. I mean, that's what it felt like. And there's a dubstep gun, which I which I scoffed at until I saw the implementation.
Oh.
Which is brilliant. You know,
you're like, it's more like trap music. It's not really like dubstep. Yeah.
That's nice. The other gun. The guy who corrects you and says it's not dubstep. There's a you know how like a minigun spools up before it starts firing?
Yeah.
With the dubstep gun, you have to wait for the drop.
What?
You pull the trigger and it builds. And then that's when it fires.
So badass. That's
fucking now here's so the thing. Badass. I've told people that.
That's so ridiculous.
I've told people that like three times, and I was playing on the show floor, and just now when I was telling you, I had this little panic attack that maybe that was something I was imagining because it was so loud. And
they're remember, putting it in now, man.
You're right. It was Saints Row, and you're like,
I want to say super producer credit.
But yeah, I love Saints superpowers in the game. That's so great. That's so cool.
I'm surprised though that Saints Row 4 like Saints Row 3 is perennially on the list of games that listeners tell me that you need to play that game, you'll love it. So why is it that you love it so much?
Like, it's a 3 especially. I can't vouch for 1 and 2. 3 is a game that more than pretty much any other game that I played in that year cares about your time. It loves the player and it says I want you to have fun all the time, and I don't want you to have to wait to have fun, and I want to keep it so you're the center of the action and you're always having a good time. You're always having fun, constantly giving you more things to do and things that are actually enjoyable and never getting too bogged down with rules or how it wants you to play the game. And it doesn't hurt that it is extraordinarily silly and not in like a – I think a lot of games go for irreverent and then just sort of like a – What was a guy who loved bacon that Ron Gilbert made?
Deathspank?
Deathspank, yes. Right? Okay, so it was trying to be funny,
and it
didn't quite get there. Saints Row 3 doesn't really try to be funny. It's just bizarre. I mean, it's really
ridiculous.
It's awesome. Ridiculous and silly and doesn't take itself seriously at all. And I think that
rickshaw chase scene with the...
Oh, there's a rickshaw chase scene where you are being...
The rickshaws are being pulled by these bring out the gimp. It's that dude.
And I think
does four even compete though? So how does four still hit the same thing and work?
In the rickshaw chase, when you shoot another rickshaw and destroy it, it explodes.
And there's another sequence where you literally have a tiger in your car with you, and you have to drive and pet the tiger to calm it down, or the tiger will start clawing your face.
And if you drive too badly, the tiger gets scared and starts attacking you.
So then you have to pet it, calm the tiger
down.
Now
imagine that. I see the expression on your face, and I'm going to imagine all that, but you can fly. Okay? So
Saints Row 4 is now I can fly.
Now you can fly.
And bash in cars.
And you're the president of the United States of America.
Bitches.
With a dubstep gun.
I love that they've made no attempt to kind of sustain any mythology or anything. You know, it's just like, and you can do this. Yeah. And now you're a superhero.
You never have to question the themes or anything. Are they taking this seriously?
No.
I'm not sure. Is that canon? It's like, who cares?
It's hilarious, too, that the whole thing is that you do these horrible, horrible things, and you can do whatever you want to anyone. You can walk up to someone and snap their neck, but everyone loves you.
Yeah,
they love you.
You're
for
the
it.
Most, and it's very honest in that way that a lot of video games aren't. I think because you're always the center of the world. In this game, like you're the most famous person on earth. Yeah. Everybody knows you because you've killed like a bajillion people.
Yeah, and you walk into just a pedestrian on the street and you kill them, and everybody's like, "Oh my god, he's doing that thing that he does." Killing people thing.
That's his bit.
That's awesome.
Get that on camera.
Yeah, you too. Yeah, but Saints Row 4 looks like that, but with superpowers.
It's just like Spec Ops: The Line.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sure. Same intent.
I was just thinking you could incorporate that into Ninja Gaiden Zed.
Sure.
See, I had to do the Zed for you.
Yeah, Ninja Gaiden Z has got that same Gonzo flavor. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yaiba?
No, it's like Ninja Yaiba. Gaiden at the peak of an acid frenzy.
Corey, we don't want to do that because Ninja Gaiden 3 sort of what I thought was going to be that deal, and then it was sort of a fail.
Yeah, this is not the same thing at all.
Good.
This is basically going the exact opposite direction. Ninja Gaiden 3 was a very serious game, actually.
Yeah, it was sad. And, it was super depressing.
Yeah, and this one's about robots and zombies and crazy shit happening constantly. So we're definitely taking some cues from Saints Row, and I think a lot of other games like Blood Dragon, for example, that have sort of paved the way for us to say, you know what, fuck you, we're going to have some fun with our game. And it's just, we're really enjoying developing.
But what keeps it Ninja Gaiden?
The thing that keeps Ninja Gaiden, I would say, is the characters. Like, you're actually going after Ryu as a new character in this game, and you're seeing the other side of, like, sort of his I'm the good guy thing going on throughout the game. We're poking fun at him throughout the game.
Hold on, what's the setup?
The setup is that Ryu killed you. So Ryu was the top ninja in the world, and you're sort of this guy coming out of a different perspective from a different clan, trying to kill Ryu, and Ryu cut you in half. And so you basically come back from the dead with a robot arm and a cyber eye, and you go after Ryu. And so there's a zombie outbreak that just happens to happen at the exact same time. And so you basically pilot in from space and and go after Ryu in the most ridiculous adventure of all time.
Wow, that's awesome.
So yeah,
we're just having no idea that's what it was about.
Yeah,
that's
what it's about. And like even if you look at our attract mode video that we prepared for E3, you'll see these two characters clashing for the first time, and it's nothing like you've ever seen Ryu do before. Like we're talking about the fact that Ryu's pants are so tight that it's like a gimp suit. So like our character asks him where's his ball gag. It's like the first thing he says to Ryu, and so that's not something you would have expected to see from Ninja Gaiden 3. But we're trying to go in another direction, and at the same time, sort of wink at those fans of those Ninja Gaiden games. And the combat, it's still a combat game, and so
right.
So we're taking, like, obviously they're great combat designers at Team Ninja, and they're working with us.
I was the first thing I played on E3 show floor, and I thought it was a lot of fun. The section that I played here was the biggest surprise for me. No jumps. You don't jump.
Jumps.
It's much more about moving sort of through the environment rather than changing the verticality. So the A or X button, however I think I remember this correctly, is a roll, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a dash.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was one of the things. If you're going to fight a bunch of zombies, if you're going to fight thousands of zombies, you don't want to be this nimble guy just hanging out up in the street lamps or whatever. So right. We wanted to put you in the middle of that horde and have you
out
just
up
destroy
in the street
them.
Lamps.
Yeah.
You're not Batman.
No, you're not Batman at all. In fact, if Batman was around, you'd probably go kill him as well.
So you've got Team Ninja combat designers working on it as well. I mean, I guess that really, to me, as much as folks who are Ninja Gaiden fans might freak out on how crazy all this is, a lot is forgiven if you strike the note of Ninja Gaiden combat, which to me was always punishingly hard until you learned how to play the game and then fell into natural place.
Yeah, and you know, we're not trying to do the exact same thing other Ninja Gaiden games did, but I think there's a lot of talent on that team. There's a lot of things learned from previous games. We're trying to make something that's a little bit more accessible. I mean, obviously, every zombie is not going to be as powerful as one of those enemies you fought in the early Ninja Gaiden games. So you're really fighting 1,000 of these guys at once, and that's what makes it really interesting and different.
All right, so we have a lot of surprises, I think, from the show. One of the surprises from the show had to be Need for Speed Rivals.
Yeah.
That was not what I would have expected John Davison to say was his favorite racing game of the show.
Right, because I really wasn't expecting to be that impressed. I sort of have Need for Speed fatigue now, for sure.
You have a glut of speed.
A glut. Yeah.
No more speed, thanks.
No more speed, thanks. I'm done. I need a night off just to come down.
You need to read.
I do.
You need to read. You need to switch to meth. Get off the soft stuff.
So, I mean, you know, I mean, it's what they called Studio Gothenburg or what. I have no idea what
the new studio. Yeah,
it's a new studio doing it. And, you know, I thought Criterion did a good job, but I think it was getting to the point where it's like, okay, it's cops chasing me through an open world again. And, but Rivals, I was really pleasantly surprised by. And, like, they had a demo running on current gen that looked pretty freaking awesome. And, yeah. I mean, Frostbite engine for Need for Speed is fantastic. And they've got the sort of dynamics of the chase. They've kind of gone back to, there's a lot of stuff from, which one was it? Hot Pursuit, I think, is sort of the, there's a lot of Hot Pursuit-y stuff in this one.
A lot of Hot Pursuit-y stuff in there. I like to put that.
I mean, we've got to the point now where I think there's retreads of retreads happening in the Need for Speed franchise, which is why I was getting kind of bored of it. But it was really exciting, which I thought they pulled off. You know, I think the first Criterion game did that really well, but Most Wanted, what was last year's called? This is the problem.
Most Wanted.
I think kind of lost the, that real sort of adrenaline rush that they got right with the one before.
Which I'm surprised, as big a fan of Burnout Paradise as you were, I'm surprised that that was the one that didn't click, because that game was more of a Criterion Need for Speed game.
But it was a Criterion without the sort of the sense of fun, you know? They sort of sucked all of the, it got very serious. And I think it got, the fact that they had all these licensed cars in that kind of game kind of sucked some of the spirit out of it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And Rivals is different. It's a bit more Hot Pursuit. It's you know, but it's exciting. There's a real sense of a chase and a real sense of speed, and it looks stunning.
Well, I was surprised to see Ubisoft throw its hat into the ring in the racing genre, which, like, again, like, why are there so many racing games? The crew
looks freaking amazing.
It's crazy, dude. It's the entire United States. And there's no, it's,
I
there's,
know.
There's off-road, there's on-road. There's,
well, that car morphing thing is rad.
Well, that's the thing. I thought that was what you were referencing with when you were talking about pad stuff of like, well, I can just mess with my car on my pad. I don't want to do that. but
well,
it looked really
okay.
You can literally take it down to the individual bolts in something. I mean, you can take apart your car down to the engine block and take apart the engine. It's insane.
Can you put it back together incorrectly?
I think I only would.
Hit 20 miles per hour, the car just explodes.
Can I mash?
I don't know what's going on
can
here.
Can I mash that up with Watch Dogs so I can disassemble your car and put it back together wrong while we're racing?
Yeah.
Now, I have to say, one of my friends is working on that game, Francois Coulon, who was sort of my second half on Spec Ops The Line.
Oh,
so
cool.
I'm really excited about that. I think it's going to be great.
It is initially when we first heard leaks of it, because it was leaked a little bit that, oh, Ubi's got this open world, you know, racing game coming. People were like, another racing game? Really? I don't know about it. And then I think that they did a great job of getting out there what makes this interesting, like the big map of the United States, the diversity of where you can play the game, you know, what sort of racing types there are on it. And it's another one that people will be excited and interested for. Just, I hope all these games.
And it's Reflections, right? It's the driver guys.
Yes,
yeah.
I think it is.
So
is that right?
They said there's going to be story stuff.
Yeah.
They said there's going to be a big story component, which can work or not.
These racing games just need to not all come out in the same windows like they've done in past, because they kill each other. They just wind up wiping each other out.
I'll be really interested to see how they execute on that full USA thing. Like, obviously, when you're mentioning some big landmarks and stuff, like, I can see how certain areas, like, yeah, that would be great, but I'm wondering, like, I'm assuming I won't be able to like drive to my house in West Virginia.
No. They said it's
Cerrito Canova.
They said it'll take about something like 8 hours to drive from coast to coast.
Nice.
So it's compressed, but you can drop your car into any part of the country. You can just drop in. It's pretty cool. It's like a big over. It's like Google Maps, and you just kind of, you know, pinch to zoom on your tablet if you want, and you can look and see what all races and what roads are in any section of the map. It's crazy.
You know, EA also had a pretty good display of next gen sports stuff, where they had a little Ignite Lab. I got to get into there and I played FIFA, and it's pretty impressive how far along they are in developing a sports game for a new console hardware right there. And I think that what was most standout piece to me about FIFA was that they could have just gone, as I felt like they did last hardware jump, for visuals. And I feel like they almost swung it back the other direction really hard, where instead of putting the new horsepower of the console into just making the players look prettier and the stadiums look prettier, they really went into what's going to make this a better game. And I tell you what, I played with my friend Alex Solman, and the fluidity of the way the players move has gotten just unbelievably solid. You know, even as I went back home and picked up 13, and it suddenly was just like glaring to me where animations were stitching together and they were transferring from one animation to another animation, because that is so gone in this game. And for anyone who loves soccer, that's so important, because the way the ball moves and yes, it's what they were showing off, but it's what they were. They have every right to be very proud of this. Because
so in that room, it was all Xbox One versions?
Yes, it was all Xbox One. It was all running on dev kits, interestingly.
And are they taking anything that's in the Xbox One version? Is Ignite current gen as well, or is Ignite only a next-gen engine?
Ignite is a next-gen engine.
So FIFA 14 on Xbox 360 is not going to be.
You know what? I honestly did not go upstairs and play it. I was all about playing the new version, and God damn, it's good.
Because it's going to be a totally different game.
Well, right, because FIFA, I mean, it is big because it's global, and
the way
it's because it's in territories that,
it'll be on PS4. It'll be on PS4 as well. It'll be on PS4 as well.
Yeah.
And everybody who is a football fan is going to want to play that game. Solely because of the way you are able to now lay through passes out without having to you can do more than just the dunk over the top. You can actually do legit through passes, because players know how to read and turn their hips and get their bodies around the ball and follow it, and not just like trap it and bring it in. And there's so much more elegance. Like, another thing they added, really, really cool if you're into the game, like this is getting down a little deeper, is they added finesse shots off headers.
Mm-hmm.
And finesse shots off headers, freaking wicked. I mean, that's absolutely cool. Crazy. So now when you've got a cross coming in, instead of just getting the single punch-in header attack, you can use your finesse shot and go for different corners, get different glancing blows. It really was really unbelievable, though. The fundamental piece for me was how much effort and work they put into the way players move on the field, getting the footwork right, mm-hmm. and then that translating into the game playing better. And people are going to ask about Madden. I watched Madden. I didn't have time to go and play that as well, because it was taking a long time to cycle through this stuff. It looked like that was also going to transfer well into like the offensive line play in Madden. So
I'm pretty stoked for next gen sports from EA Sports.
Hell yeah.
Pretty damn stoked.
I'm stoked for EA making Mirror's Edge 2.
Yeah, that looks great.
Holy tease, hell.
Great tease. And it's like, and they knew too. Like, they're like, you know, you guys have been waiting for this for a long time. Yes, we have.
Which I think is hilarious because nobody bought the first one.
It's true.
They just talked about it all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, everyone talked about it. But no one, I mean, the reason they said they weren't going to do one originally is because, like, well, you didn't like the first one because none of you bought it.
I think that game represents so much potential. It was a
creative aspiration.
Pretty good game, but it represented the potential for a great game.
Yeah. I tell you what it reminded me, and I think it really speaks to the differences between the two companies, is it reminded me of Assassin's Creed 1, where, like, I can absolutely see the possibilities with what you guys are doing here, and some of the things in your game are not where they need to be.
Totally.
And Ubisoft saw the what they had and developed it into something that's a phenomenon. EA didn't nail Mirror's Edge the first time. And I would argue Mirror's Edge is probably a more refined product than the first Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah, the difference is the first Assassin's Creed game sold like gangbusters.
Well, yeah.
Well, and because it had big marketing behind it. Right. And Mirror's Edge was still sort of a niche game that was not marketed the same way. And they forced the gunplay into it. And the most significant piece of that trailer was that there was not a gun to be seen. Mm-hmm. And
well, I think the bad guys had some.
No, they had batons.
Oh.
So there was not a firearm to be seen. Please let that be indicative of the creative strategy.
And man, my God, that game on Frostbite is going to be so
going to be amazing. Thing about the first one was it pushed lighting in the industry in general. Like, everyone saw that, and then it was a clear definition of this is what lighting can do.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was almost a tech demo with some decent gameplay strapped into it. But it had tons of potential, and the visual aspects of it were amazing. And so now we're seeing some of that come to life.
This is a great way to segue into a game I completely forgot about. Did anybody else see Dying Light?
I heard great things. I have not seen it.
Warner Brothers zombie game?
Warner Brothers zombie parkour game. Oh. It's like Mirror's Edge meets Dead Island, basically. And which I was completely shocked at. First person game. Yes, it's zombies, which it didn't need to be. It's so strange to me. It could have been... Dan and I were talking about this. It would have been so great if it was like vampires or werewolves or something that we're not fatigued at.
And, to death
and
of
it could
zombies.
Still be the cool... Basically, the game revolves around this awesome day-night cycle where day zombies are less scary than night zombies, so you have to accomplish things before nightfall or else you're effed. And at night, you don't want to fight them. You want to run. And running is this fun parkour Mirror's Edge style... first person leaping on stuff. I mean, there was a moment where a guy was in a full sprint, a zombie was in front of him, he leapt, stepped on the zombie's head, and then used that to jump onto a wall. That's cool.
It's awesome in its ridiculousness.
It's often awesome in its ridiculousness, but it really was a big surprise to me. I wish it wasn't zombies, but it still looks like it could be really fun. The only combat they showed in that entire game was all melee, so it reminded me very much of Dead Island in that you have a bat, a gun.
Is any company more schizophrenic than Techland? Is there anybody who will hit one out of the park and destroy
and then
it?
Fall
and
then on their face.
The next game, it's a dirty fart. why can't you guys? Where's the consistency, guys? It kills me.
And on that tip, anybody else see the Evil Within, Mikami's game?
Yeah, I saw it. I'm the only person of all my friends that was not impressed with it. Everybody else came out buzzing, and I don't know. It didn't work for me.
Well,
because it's too much, or
no, it just didn't. I felt like. I mean, it's very Resident Evil 4, which is a good thing.
Sure.
It's
very, very gory and violent.
Very
and
gory and violent. I was never scared by what I saw in that. And there's a very long
demo. Oh, you're kidding me.
I wasn't.
Oh my God, dude.
There was a couple of moments where
I can't
like,
even play that game. There's no way I can play that game.
That's why I shouldn't talk about it.
There's no way I could play. Ariel was super well. She was pumped for it after the second half. So the demo takes two pieces, and the first piece is sort of the setup introduction to like going into the asylum that's fallen into like crazy land, and then the second piece takes place later in the game, and it's very Silent Hillish.
Where
the world is changed. Like you're like going down a hallway, and then the hallway morphs into a different hallway that's blood drenched, and then the hallway changes again, and you go through a door, and suddenly you're like standing outside, and then you go through another door, and you're someplace else, like all of this, like you have no idea what's going on in the world thing. Yeah. And it happened.
There's a chase with like a basically Leatherface from Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
And it's that if I was playing it, I would probably have my heart pounding because he's limping and you're just like, please go faster.
He catches you with the chainsaw, so you're limping the entire time and you're trying to get away from him and you're playing like a weird stealth game at the same time. Well,
it's actually survival horror. Like,
it's serious. It's not
a show. I don't have like a rocket launcher, and that's amazing.
It is really effed up. And Mikami is, I mean, this will be the acid test, I think, for whether survival horror has a place anymore. Because this is like, this should touch all of the fans, like, key buttons, and if it works and it clicks for them, that's great, and if it doesn't, then back on the shelf it goes, I guess, for a good bit.
I was the inverse of most people, because they showed Evil Within and Wolfenstein New Order in the same presentation, and I was more up on Wolfenstein. Most people came out of that.
I loved Wolfenstein.
I thought the beginning section that they showed,
I had no idea Wolfenstein could be funny and clever, and
not just
amazing.
Funny and clever, but super creepy, super well written. I mean, it's a Starbreeze kind.
Well, it's basically the old Starbreeze team.
Yeah, and so it looks like very a Starbreeze darkness.
Game. Gorgeous visuals.
Gorgeous visuals, and there's this sequence that they showed of you serving coffee to this Nazi crazy person and her
who like gives you a test
child. But
it was weird.
The writing was so strong and the voice acting was so strong. Unfortunately, then they followed that up with a shooting section, which was very
because
the numbers.
And it's still Wolfenstein. Yeah. And I think what they were saying is, we have some clever bits and we're still going to be Wolfenstein.
Is it next gen as well?
Yeah.
It is?
It is.
It looked awesome.
Well, if it's the dudes who did Escape from Butcher Bay, I'm in.
Yeah.
So, it is.
Yeah, those guys. Yeah,
sure. I don't have to see anything else. I'm in.
Yeah, that and The Darkness. And they was like, they're like, which one do you like better? We was like, we like both of them. Of course. They're awesome. All right. I guess we should close this thing up with finishing moves, but maybe we should come up with a finishing moves game of the show or gem or
well, I gotta talk about the Oculus gem. Let me talk about the Oculus really fast.
You can make your finishing move.
I could, but I had another one. All right, it's fine. I'm making my finishing move.
All right, stick around, we got finishing moves coming now.
It's the weekend and it's time for finishing moves.
Jeff Cannata, you're going to get two finishing moves.
What?
I'm gonna let you go first, and then you can also wrap it up at the close.
Holy crap. It's a miracle. It's an E3 miracle. So as exciting as all these new next gen consoles are and the new tech, and as thrilled as I am for many of the games that I saw at this E3, the most thrilling, life changing experience I had was the two times I got to use the Oculus Rift. I got a chance to do the EVR demo, which, if you haven't heard about, it's there's always something at E3 that is like in the back room. You hear about it on the show floor. Like, oh, did you hear about this thing? You got to go see it. And it started as a small buzz the first day, and it grew like wildfire too. The fact that on Thursday, when I walked by that door, there was a line of people down the hallway the entire time trying to get in. And the day that I went, which was like day two, we just walked right in. So it really, I'm sure you've heard about it by now, but basically the EVE Online guys, in 4 weeks during their lunches and after work, mocked up this very brief demo for the Oculus Rift, where you are inside a spaceship and it's kind of a X-Wing versus TIE Fighter style shooter. Very simplistic, but holy fucking shit. In the Oculus Rift, it really was the first time I saw the potential for how this can be a complete game changer. And I raved about this a lot. The thing I kept saying to people is that sequence in Star Wars where he's sitting there and he's like, I can't shake him. And he's looking around. That is literally what I was doing. I was looking with my head, rotating around, trying to find the bad bogey on my six, you know, and the fact that I could just look all the way around, it was in 3D. If I looked down, I saw my body holding on to the controls. I was inside the game. And it was a game. It didn't feel like a tech demo. It made me go, oh my God, racing games in this, you know, X-Wing versus TIE Fighter type games in this are going to be stunning.
That's the promise.
That's the promise. And for the first time, I saw it in action. And then later, we also got, I got a chance to go and see the HD mock-up. It was a prototype that really at the last minute they threw together. They said the Friday of E3, they finished it. And it was the HD version, because if anybody has seen the Oculus or seen the dev kits, they are very low res, very interlaced and look not that great. The HD version, still not going to be as crisp and beautiful as your home television if you have a nice HD set, but a huge step up. And they had mocked up
the Unreal 4 demo, if you saw the Unreal 4 demo with that cavern, the lava cavern with the demon inside it, and you could like shoot ice bolts out of your hand, and wandering around in HD, in 3D, inside the Oculus, this is going to be the future. I am convinced that we are going to look back on first-person shooters.
Jeff Cannata pronounces it.
I'm convinced that we're going to laugh in the same way that we laugh at, you know, Atari 2600 games. We're going to laugh that you had your little hand holding a rifle locked to your perspective. It's going to seem so ridiculous that we moved a mouse around or we moved a stick around and our entire body and head moved in unison. It's going to seem so stupid because decoupling that, unlocking that is a completely different way to experience games, and I cannot wait to see where that technology goes.
So the Eve demo wasn't HD, it was in the...
Right, it was in the low res.
Was the frame rate any good? Because like, a lot of the demos are like have been pretty kind of janky on animation.
I thought the frame rate was great. It was very simplistic.
Yeah.
So you weren't seeing the kind of, like the Unreal stuff in the HD version.
Right.
It was, you know, very simplistic stuff, but... I mean, every single person that walked out of there, we were all like high-fiving going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. For the first time, I'm inside Battlestar Galactica. I'm inside Star Wars. Like, it feels like I was inside a cockpit. You look up, you see the cockpit over you, little reflection.
All right, you want your other finisher too?
No,
you got to be quick now.
Sorry. I, the clothes. It was a big deal. It was like the most
exciting thing.
Corey, how about you?
I'm really excited for Transistor, and my friends over at Supergiant that are working on that, Greg Kasman and those guys, and obviously want to give a shout out to my developers at Spark and the guys at Team Ninja and Koei Tecmo that are pushing hard for this Ninja Gaiden Z thing that's super crazy and fun. So I'm really excited about that.
Awesome. Have fun working on it. Hopefully we'll get to see you again soon since
Thanks
you're not too far away.
Yeah.
Justin, finishing move from you, sir.
You know, the PlayStation 4 controller. After I watched the Sony press conference, I thought to myself, wow, you know, I've always, this past generation, I've always been more inclined towards Xbox. It's just what I prefer playing on. I like the controller a little better. I like the ecosystem better. And I'd started to suspect that I might begin to lean a little more Sony in this generation. And then when I held that controller, it really cemented it for me. I was like, wow, this is great. Like,
you just stole my finishing move, by the way.
Son of a bitch.
I agree.
Let me choose another one.
No,
pizza
cool.
at the Galaxy Cafe is out of control. For just $12, you can get a slice of prosciutto.
I'll tag team it.
I lean Pizza Hut this generation, but the Galaxy...
If I may jump in with you, we'll just tag team this
one. Yeah, we'll just tag...
Because I
really
love the way...
It's fantastic.
I was so happy that... When I first saw it, I thought the form factor was just going to be the same. It's hard to tell when you're looking at a picture. I mean, this is one of the things people out there listening, like, they wonder, what does it feel like to hold the damn controller? Mm-hmm. That controller doesn't feel like holding every other PlayStation controller.
No.
The pieces...
Since, what, mid the late 90s? I
mean, they finally got on the... Out, they right? finally got on some design.
The triggers.
The triggers are great.
Yeah.
The pieces you actually hold, the part that cups into your palm of your hand, it's shaped the right shape. Now it comes into your hand the right way, and the way mm-hmm. your hand then falls over it, suddenly I didn't care so much that the stick wasn't up in the top left spot, although I still like that a little better. Mm-hmm. And I was going to say, the Xbox One controller is also
it's great.
Amazing.
It just had less.
I don't like where the bumpers are on it.
It's also the Xbox One's smaller than the Xbox controller, right?
Yeah,
it does feel a little smaller.
Like they're both quite narrow now. Like I think your thumbs are closer together when they're on the sticks. But that
PS4 controller, it's not as bulky as you may imagine from seeing pictures. It's a nice, comfortable.
But the
fit.
DualShock
the touchpad's
could've
not
used a bit more bulk, frankly.
Yes,
I mean.
Yeah. And it has
like
a little bit more bulk, but it's
toy a little bit.
Yeah,
this thing
feels like
it's great.
I agree with you, Justin.
The only complaint I had is that the tension on the sticks still feels a little bit loose to me.
Yeah,
I like
the sticks
a little
on
more.
The Xbox One controller are great.
Oh, the whole Xbox One controller is fantastic. And it's got Xbox One has this new sort of grippy surface. Yeah.
The plastic they use there is really awesome.
I'm a professional fucking video game journalist. I can't come up with a better word than grippy.
Grippy?
That's the word. It's grippy. It has.
No, they use that matte surface. They use that matte surface, soft plastic on the underside of it. And I guess it's across all the top too. And it feels good when you put it in your hand. It does feel really good.
But it's a great controller. And I guess I should just mention on polygon.com, we've got tons of videos and stuff from the show. And like we did some in depth interviews with folks. And
by the way, we will have loads of links for everybody who was here guesting on the show. Of course, big thanks to the Polygon guys who came, and they have had
huge coverage. This is like a lifelong thrill for me. Seriously, this has been awesome.
I'm not
and
a brother,
but you're a little toddler, and you're like,
someday I'll be on a show with Garnett Lee.
Dude, Garnett was 67 at that point. It was a low blow. I apologize.
And it's our damn show now.
I appreciate
best
that.
Buy
what did I do?
Like,
what did I do? I railroaded you.
Luigi really turned you, huh? He really.
I don't know about you, Garnett, but having Justin on the show, he has the same energy about him as Luke. Have you noticed? There's definitely a Luke-ish. Yeah.
He's got some Luke-ish.
There've been times where you've been talking, and it's reminded me of the old days, and when Luke would like. It's a compliment. It's
somebody
highest compliment.
Somebody fucking get me in development. Get me out of the zone. let's get me paid.
So, John, we're one step closer. We just need a Shane. So it could be like you and me and Justin. And
I guess I'm out.
I ran into Shane last night, and like
you didn't see me wink. I was like,
I've been trying to get Shane to do stuff for ages, and I know you brought it up as well, but like Sony just won't let him out.
I know, and I didn't even see. I did not even Shane. I'm sorry, I didn't even see you this week. It sucked.
Yeah,
that was a bummer. Anyway, John Davison finishing.
So I have finished. I have a self-serving one because I need some. I need some help from
what do you need help
the
with?
Listeners of Weekend Confirm. So the thing that I left GameSpot nearly a year ago to do is now nearly finished. So it's called First, as I've mentioned before, and we're about to start testing it outside of the studio. So it's more an alpha than a beta, honestly. So I want to round up somewhere between 20 and 50 people. I think for this test, we're going to lean more on the Android version. So if you have an Android, a fairly recent Android phone, so Samsung devices, you know, like a sort of more modern Android phone, because it's difficult to account for the audio. Like an S3 or an S4, or like, it'll probably run fine on S2 or if you've got a Note. On Twitter, if you follow at First4Gamers, all one word, F-I-R-S-T.
F-O-R or the number 4?
F-I-R-S-T, F-O-R, Gamers.
Okay.
Follow that, send a message, and copy me at JWH Davidson on it, and I'll follow you back, and we'll do, I'll DM and get your email address, and on Android, I can just email you an APK, or I can put it in a Dropbox, and you can download it. So we want to get people in, so it's a community app for sharing stuff about video games and sorting it into channels, and it's all live chat. So I want to get like a bunch of people in a room talking live about video game stuff and posting YouTube videos into the chat, because we need to start building up an idea of what it's like at scale. So we are doing iOS as well, and we'll probably start testing that a little later. So if you're interested in that as well, again, follow those things on Twitter, and we'll reach out in a few weeks. So I'm going to try and do the test maybe as soon as next week. Might be the week after. So yeah, follow, and I will be in touch.
Jeff Cannata, you get to bring it home.
Just very briefly, I thought it was a fantastic E3, very exciting, one of the best E3s in recent memory, and it was really special to be able to see so many great people. A lot of We Can Confirm fans came up and said hi at the show, which was great. A lot of really cool people, including all the people that guested with us today. I really appreciate being able to see all the people from out of town. Every single day of E3, I got home and posted a YouTube video about what I thought each day. So if you want to see more extended talk, we didn't get a chance to talk about a lot of games, including Lords of the Fallen, which is a really interesting sort of...
We'll be back next week.
Dark Souls game. Yeah, kind of that genre. Anyway, so check out my YouTube page, or you can look on my Twitter feed and find the link there. I sent the links out at Jeff Cannata with 2 N's and 1 T.
That's him. 2 N's, 1 T. Big thanks, of course, to all the guests today. Very much thanks for Corey coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Justin and Arthur, big thanks to you. Great having Johnny on from Nintendo World Report. John Davison, of course, longtime friend. And
don't forget Arthur. He's still out there.
I did say Arthur and Justin from Polygon. And Polygon had great coverage. Tons. You guys, like, obviously, you have an army, and your army was in full effect.
I didn't make any of it, so I can say it's great.
Dude, their video coverage was fantastic, and I was on their website every day, as I was Shaq News, and really, really cool stuff. And we also should thank Zav. He should be getting here any minute.
He should be getting here any moment. And, you know, and big thanks to my team at Shaq News, who, with a smaller team, went out of their way to tailor what they were covering in breakout stories that were interesting and above the board, knowing that, you know, hey...
to see other stuff other places, but hopefully we'll get some interesting stuff. So you can catch all that. We have a linked page there on Shack News, which, by the way, we got rid of the old homepage. It looks like Shack News again. No more weird boxes. It's just like it's supposed to be, finally. So I hope you guys all enjoy that. And, of course, thanks to our hosts here in Santa Monica at the Atlantis Group Studio, and Dave for producing and bringing the coffee and donuts, or taking great care of anybody. I finished up all the thank yous. Hope you enjoyed E3 2013. Of course, we will come back next week with a little more on it, probably. We'd love to
some
get
you. Last of Us, probably. How cool is it that every year at E3, you have those doldrums of like, I saw this cool new stuff and there's nothing new to play.
Oh, you've got something cool
something
to play right
new
now.
To play, yeah. Baby.
It's waiting at home.
So hop in the thread on Shack News. Let us know what you'd like us to come back to. But for now, that's it. That's your Weekend Confirmed, and we are Ghost. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. Get real. We taking it over, baby. Shake it out. They said I never made it, they called me Zip-Zero. But now I'm a lieutenant in this hip-hop bureau. There was a time when I was riding the vine, but then they called my number and I'm ready to shine. I sit back, relax, ready to go. Put a little swagger with my sick ass flow. Now I rock the stages and I do it with ease. For blowing up from promoters overseas. Put me up in the condo. No complaints when I'm done with my show. I'm grateful for every single one of y'all. Without your ears, I wouldn't be playing this game at all. We didn't invent it, but we're bringing it here. Get those hands to the skies, let me hear the cheers. The fourth quarter, the game is on the line. Watch me hit the winner with this final time. The game you are playing, I'm the one that brought it here. I brought it here. The one that brought it here, I brought it here. Orthopedically sleeping, no stressing. Then be the soldier, I be the weapon. I've seen a lot of good soldiers die in my fingertips, cause they all ran dry. Straight pushing it, got my own agenda. Treating every month as if it were December. Wrap my presence in the form of these words. Metaphorically attacking with my war birds. Rocking a hock, rocking a block. Beam me up, Scotty, cause I just feel Spock. The search is over, but the quest begins. Trying to find a way to get paid for these spins. And make this game my main hustle. Escape the clutches of the 9-to-5 struggle. Get that recipe for success like Betty Crocker. And get this game popping like Homer Redenbacher. That game you are playing, that game you are playing, you're not here anymore. You're not here anymore. That game you are playing, that game you are playing. Trivial little banter. The basic question and not in the answer. You're on the minor and not in the major. I'm a touch screen, you a Skytel pager. This matchup, baby, it ain't fair. I create the game and you're just a player. I'm like Jordan, Bird, and Phil Jackson. You're the number one, busted, what happened? I got that seat, yeah, I'm the captain.